You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
Person named Questioning Our Reality, QOR, is a big fan of fakeologist.com. But he also likes to stir the pot and say insulting things about visitors of fakeologist.com. Recently he made a post saying that Jairus has poor English. Jairus is a friendly Swiss man whose English is actually very good, but he does have a strong accent. You can read QOR's criticism of Jairus for yourself in the info box below. So on a recent episode, Rick learns to say some very nice things about
Jairus.
Jairus.
Yes.
Yay.
I am there.
Now, who was the guy you were having to go at the other night? On Fakeologist.
Question of reality.
Yeah,
I want to get on with the guy a little bit more, but to be honest, yesterday I was totally drunk. I was totally pissed, and it was really hard to maintain a coherent train of thought.
Are you a drunk ass? Rolling on the motor, drunk ass, we call him.
Yes, I gotta give me a break.
Yeah,
I've only done half a dozen of those on your site.
You're the expert, then.
Gareth, I've had a run. I had a run-in with him as well, Gareth. He spreads the hate
evenly, but we know what the opposite of love is, right, Rollo? You taught me that.
What are we talking about? Indifference as well.
Yeah. Guys, who are we talking about?
Questioning our reality. Yes, but it's not like the hate is overwhelming me, you know? I just give him his 15 minutes, and I will do so every week. Just 15 minutes.
Your English is very good. Your English is very good. You're one of the better fakeologist audio chatters we've had in the past. So congratulations and keep it up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. It means the world to me.
Abe is a lovely fellow, and hopefully one day QOR will stop pestering Abe like this. Or at the very least, hopefully QOR will focus his opprobrium on Guy, who is more deserving of it. Guy is an admitted liar, and he still believes that he lives on a giant spinning ball. True, real, because sometimes people argue on the internet, so that is proof that media and authorities tell us. This is despite the fact that he claims to understand that nukes are fake. How can nukes be fake but the rest of so-called war be real? Don't waste your time asking Guy, because he will just spin around in figure eights. Guy is probably a nice person in real life, but he needs to take an introductory course on logic, pronto. Right now he is a walking talking logical fallacy, and it is embarrassing for all parties concerned. There is only one thing more boring than Napoleon's paranoia-laden audio chats, and that is Guy's fallacy-laden audio chats. At least Napoleon has a super deep manly voice and a cool British accent. Goodness gracious, check the info box below for more information about QOR, The Rollo Drunk Show, featuring Rick and Noise Level, and Fakeologist.com, where you get what you pay.
Fakeologist.com, you wanker.
Oh, Paul! It's Napoleon Wilson! Nah, he won't fucking start stealing, mate.
My eyes, hold up!
I'd like to get some back, Guy. What say you?
Figures of four instance Guy turn up.
Punish him. John the Banner is accusing the telling the girl. No.
How many years ago? 6,000
Guy is making notes. He's polishing up his act. But the point is... the fucking point is, right?
He looks a while.
His name is Dutch. He lives in Colombia, like Dutch people are often, Dick. Huh?
Yeah, no.
Just because he's Jewish, don't mean he believes his fucking parents got fucking gas. So that's quite admirable. Admirable.
I'm not Jewish. I am not Jewish. So.
And he's not a troll. And he's not a show. Oh, and he's not a pale opposite. He's cool, man. So cool.
Yeah, look.
But I'm going to describe this in words, and that's all I have. I'm not going to describe. Here, can you back me up here? Look what I'm doing over there. I know you're a bit calm. See what I'm doing there? Yeah. Watch this. Right. See that prism, that angle of that flat plane that I'm making at the bottom of my beer can?
Where you stand, Joe?
Here, on the... Get it?
Yeah, a bit, right?
And then that movement of this fucking funny curve. Or not. I can't remember it. You don't...
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hi, I'm Paul. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
All right, we're in the live stream here. It is June the 4th, 2019. Lots of voices. I've rounded them up and brought them into the live stream. Here they are.
Yes, I could have moved the bot to the room 11.
Yeah, you could, but that's sort of sneaky. I don't really... It's better if people... explicitly go into the live stream, then it's of their own volition, really.
Okay.
We're so just waiting it. For...
Yeah.
I think they're afraid.
Yeah, I think they're afraid.
Yeah, that's why it's not nice to bring the bot in.
I agree with you, Ab. No, you're correct. You're correct. Yeah.
No, I would
Unless
have informed everyone.
Everyone.
Yes, I would have informed everyone, but it was a possibility when you mentioned that we should go live. To bring the bot to the room, in the other sense that bringing people to the room.
No, I meant you could drag other people into this room if you wanted. I think you can, as a moderator. Verified.
No, I can do it even.
Yeah, anyone can. Verified can as well. Maybe they don't know how to get into the room.
I just moved Dante to the room, and I am going to... And Lorna just moved it by herself, so...
Hi, Dante. I can't remember if we spoke to Dante before on the live stream.
You did, but you were drunk, Ep.
Yeah.
That's a joke, because you don't drink.
Yeah, okay, I know. There's Laura, the Phoenician, Gaia. Hi, how's everyone? How's the Shill Network tonight?
Wonderful. And you are listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com, and it is the Wednesday, 4th of June for most of you, but it's the 5th for me already.
Okay, yeah.
And hi everyone, I am Garris with the Phoenician, Dante, Gaia, Laura Mars, and of course, Fakeologist.
Yes, hi.
Hello, and hello to Napoleon and Unreal. Thinks that I am JLB or some type of voice morph. Although I guess I could be, right? I could have some type of equipment in this room.
Yep, it's true.
Just like when I'm playing ambulance sounds in the background here. Yeah.
I still want someone to post the link of the voice morphing software. I haven't seen it yet. I'd like to have the link because I'd like to try it.
I mean, your girlfriend, Faye, knows.
Yeah.
If anybody has a good one, I'd be interested as well, because I have clients who I would love to record on audio, and they're insecure, so I could distribute their content on my social channels, and a voice morphing
solution. Is that right?
Yeah, it would be very welcome,
like
in terms of putting like blogs into audio format and things of that nature, creating videos with just like images, you know, simple things for like elder... audiences and clients that kind of are insecure about, you know, putting their face and voice out there. But, you know,
the speech to text that JLB was using in the last videos, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's still
Fakeologist.com videos he made, right?
Well, a text to speech, but I'm talking about having, let's just say, a voiceover or a voice recording of a human, let's just say, for 30 seconds, and then taking that, plugging it into some type of software program, and then let's just say I drafted a completely separate script that text to voice would be using the voice that was pre-recorded by the actual person, so that then that text would to voice would sound like that person. That's basically what I'm getting at.
Like Marcus Allen, right?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about prior to recording here. I was trying to get to the bottom of why so many people seem to accuse him and JLB and other people of being chills. You know, what toolkit were, you know, what pieces of evidence were indicative?
It's mainly because they're very strong personalities. Strong personalities that make absolutist or very strong statements tend to get a lot of flack, which maybe they deserve it. I'm more wishy-washy. I'm a harder target to put in the crosshairs. I'm weaker. Yeah, I'm not as absolutist. I'm not as confident in my speech as some of those two guys.
Yes, making a strong statement can be polarizing in one sense or the other.
Yeah, I mean, look at Donald Trump. Look how he speaks. He speaks in absolutist terms. He's there to provoke, and look at the response he gets. He gets mass. It's fantastic.
Let's be honest, Donald Trump got a circumcised dildo up his ass.
Guy, huh?
I don't know. Is that Dutch humor?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Well, so what I always miss that humor.
What about the idea that maybe the text version of Donald Trump is like some of the attack version of communication we might see in Discord versus what seems to me like a very pleasant man with a perfect wife, I should say, in his live, real-life person, RLP, as I've trademarked. That's the guy we get. I don't see him as being such a confrontational absolutist. I think he's probably one of the more calmer politicians in some ways. I guess he has probably. Yeah. I've missed a lot because I don't really watch every single thing. And I think we remember
Do you think he writes his own tweets at all?
No, that's another character, but I
don't know. No, there is a team for that.
Uh-oh.
Do rich people really wash their own dishes? No. Why would they write their own tweets, right? I mean, come on.
So you don't think he writes any of his own tweets?
No.
No, maybe.
And they don't even write their own speeches. Come on.
Maybe if he vetted them, you know, they show it to him and he approve or not, but I don't think that he wrote them himself.
Hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
People have a whole team. I mean, he grew up in a rich business kind of environment. He has his own butlers, his own drivers, his own cleaning personnel, whatever. I mean, would he write his own tweets? No, of course not.
He doesn't write his own speeches. I mean, Ari Fleischer was one of the greatest speech writers in history. I mean, he wrote lots of speeches. So, like, who's doing the communication, you know, and to what extent am I? If I read a book and then I read a book the day before that and I watched this video or that video, I'm just representing myself as I am today. It would be really weird if my persona didn't change, even if my voice didn't change over a few years, you know, because I change. Everything changes. Do you know what I mean, Ab? It's like, I think that the origins of our ideas sometimes get misconstrued with the way that we present them. And in the game that this is, the game of life or the game of media fakery, which is apparently a big challenge put before us to see what we can figure out or not through multiple types of media, they think there is this major schism between the person and what we see. And that's where this idea of the false witness that Dave so eloquently brings up, and also JLB. I don't think that they're necessarily all in as much as you think they are necessarily. They are, but that's not necessarily the point they're making, and that's why I accused Gaia of being a gatekeeper on JLB, not completely 100% destroying his argument without emotion based on separating JLV from his ideology. And what Dante and I were talking about, the methodology with which he actually presents it. And does he do that on purpose or not? He is a worthy opponent of mine. I guarantee that.
But what gate are you talking about? I mean, John, I don't want to talk semantics, as you call it, but you have to be clear about what you're talking about. So if there is gatekeeping involved, you need to define what gate is there.
Now, by the way, the finish in your mic is really low, because if I turn you up, then Gaia blasts me right off the...
out of here.
Oh, right, it's my fault. Blame the phone. No,
you've got a good mic. Okay. Gaia is always the loudest. Gaia has a good mic. Everyone has to get up to Gaia's level. I know I'm faint, but I can't do anything about it in the car.
Jairus always sounds like he's blasting to me. I feel like I'm too loud in my own ears. So everybody okay? Check, check, check.
It's okay.
Little man.
Jared is only loud when he's drunk.
Yeah, Jared.
Oh. Okay.
Good too.
So Dante and I were trying to understand the best we could some of the chat in Discord. I don't know if it's really even relevant here because we can't see it. There again, we're misrepresenting, which is what we're talking about. What is representing reality if it's just a message? And how do we discern what's being said by said individual? What makes it useful, or what makes it a lie, for that matter? And so, if you tune someone out, if you tune someone out completely, and you miss
Belch came right through.
I'm so sorry, but yeah, that's what I was trying to challenge Gaia on there, tongue in cheek. Why is just basically completely destroy his argument. And then see if he'll fold up like a cheap tent. And he probably won't, because that's not all that he's trying to say, is what I'm trying to say. So I reversed it on him, of course. In my crazy mind, I tried to explain to him that hoaxes are wars. And they are. They're wars in your mind. And he's given me nothing but crickets. So we'll see.
I got the cricket. Oh, that's a crazy cricket. What does Dante have to say about all this? Oh, hi, Laura. There's Laura Mars. I love the lady voices. Hi, Laura.
Hello. Dante, you're asking Dante what he was talking about, though.
You fucking sexist.
Yeah. Yeah, Ab, what I really am in alignment with you about is how fascinated you are with how they can deceive the world. So I'm not really interested in getting into the minutia of any individual fakeologist and their communication style. Like, that isn't that.
Yeah, me neither.
That's not of deep interest to me, because a lot of these people's personas don't bother me, nor do their convictions. I know people with strong convictions about what they know or what other people don't know can be polarizing. That's understandable.
Yeah.
But me, that's not indicative that they're nefarious or have ulterior motives or et cetera and so forth. Some of the things I've heard from your chats, and one of them I listened to, was it like a few weeks ago? You were with these two radio hosts, these normies.
Yeah,
that was good, man. You did really well.
Thank you.
Yeah, but how they were just like, oh, yeah, well, time to, they're so flippant and dismissive, but then when you call them out on some of their points, they're like, oh, well, I just don't have time to deal with this. I don't care. It's like, all right, well, you can't simultaneously care and then not care and then allocate a weekend of thinking about it and then just say it doesn't matter. Like, those guys are like kind of flip-flopping, but that definitely my interest is not only how I was deceived, but how the masses can be deceived, and is that just kind of some type of shortcoming in our brain circuitry and our spirits? Like, if we're in whatever this realm that we're living in, what does that imply about who we are as a group, and what orders of magnitude of intelligence do the people who run the show have above us? You know, and I don't like to use the word we and us.
The key is having a bad childhood. It helps.
I will say also that one thing is, as I see reality, is it's like a bad comedic series with a laugh track, you know? So you hear people laugh all the time, and kind of tell you when to laugh, what is funny and what is not. It's reality for me is like that. It's like a movie with a laugh track, so people should know when to be scared.
Oh, a laugh track, Yes. Oh, so I thought you said love track, a laugh track.
I'm sorry.
I'm thinking, what's a love track?
I mean, Garrett is secretly a porn actor, so yeah.
Former. Well, speaking of acting, but that's part of this this perception. So our individual perception, and now we have a group perception, and have created. I mean, some people could say the fakeologists think this or that, right? That's their right to say that there's a viewpoint that we all agree on, even if we individually have different. When we're viewing media, when we're actually we each are experiencing a media event, let's say simultaneously on TVs in different rooms. There's several things that will come up. There's the ledge, all alleging characters, actors, whether they're bad actors. Remember bad actors? So how many times have we heard bad actor? And then truth and lie. And so there's major components. It's the tetrad of components there that are always coming up in these events. And it kind of comes back to the part of the conversation or the more succinct part of the conversation we were having, unfortunately, earlier. I'm trying to recapture it without stealing the show because I easily just take the listening off the air.
No, the toothpaste is out of the tube.
So how do we get back to where, what is this reality and how can you experience it? And to what level do you witness something? Therefore, then it becomes your experience, which is true. Are you a liar if you even try to reiterate something that has already happened? Then are you reenacting, which is gets back into, I'm maybe stirring the pot here, but when you talk about the Civil War, what do we know mostly about the Civil War now in modern times? All we know is that there are reenactment. So, was it real?
Well, I can't really address that. You have a lot of concepts that sometimes I have a hard time wrapping my head around. I'm a pretty simple person, but to speak back to Dante, I like your way of thinking, and you and I are in simpatico in a lot of ways, the way we think. So, yeah, I agree with you. And as for getting on that Normie show, I do still listen to it, of course. I've been blocked all over the place. He won't talk to me anymore, even though I helped pay for his bathroom and part of his fundraiser campaign there. But I got on the show only because the EGI was so provocative that he wanted to make fun of it. That's the only way I got on. He wouldn't have brought me on and talk about media fakery. So if people think, well, you're just causing a ruckus by going on with the EGI fantasy way of thinking, and it is very fantastical, then that's the only way I could get on the show. And I am proud to say I'm one of the only guys that went the whole show with my topics, where normally they cut it off after 5 or 10 minutes. So,
but
obviously there was an interest level.
From just throwing an idea out, let's just say they're pressing buttons.
Hold on.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
I'm Nerudy. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.
I don't remember who that was.
I did not catch the name.
Me neither. I didn't catch it either. Melanin or something. Yeah, go ahead, Dante. Sorry.
Just a couple of things. Do you, in terms of your memories, do you recall there being, if you could think back, there being this many orchestrated events, like let's say 10, 15, 20 years ago, or do you think that they're just accelerating and expanding and
can you say that again? You went away.
Oh, I'm sorry. What I'm saying, in your recollection, do you, and in terms of your constantly following a lot of these events, do you think that are they expanding internationally and happening with more frequency, or we just weren't really attuned to what was being done 15, 20 years ago. Like, it seems to me like there's obviously many more shootings, and is this like an emergent property of, gaming, or are the controllers kind of monitoring the energetic emissions of humans and determining, oh, well, they need to be scared here, they need to be placated here, or, you know, kind of like their own game of Warcraft that's, like, being done at a much higher level? I'm just throwing out ideas as to, like, why this
would be. I don't know if they picked up in the pace. There's certainly lots of different, probably phony themes back in the past. I think they go in waves for propaganda purposes. We get shootings, and we get school shootings, and we get knifings, and we get buses driving in the crowds. They all seem to happen in waves. I don't know.
To answer the question, I will say that in Europe, at least, they, because it was even before I was born in the 70s and early 80s, and even in France in the early to mid-90s, there was a lot of suspicious acts of terror and those kind of things that at the moment, because there was obviously no internet access, people cannot research that well as they can now, but there was a lot of suspicious events in Europe. And if you look at the history of a country like Italy in the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of political assassination, kidnapping, even act of terror that were clearly done for political purpose by some nefarious organization. So we said that at least in Europe, it's something that is historically present, at least since the early 70s.
Okay.
I feel like some of it has to do with the fact that we carry this information around in our pocket with us now. Well, I mean, how long have we had smartphones where the information just feeds to us all day long? I don't know that they're necessarily events that were not happening as frequently, but we just weren't hearing about it as frequently. We didn't have 20 different news sources that we check throughout the day.
Right. Well, I have a line of questioning, because if at a meta level, is the purpose behind the propaganda and the deception, we don't really know, but let's just say it's for social stability. They have determined that, you know, there's a certain level of fantasy and a certain level of violence and a certain level of, all these disparate emotions. Is that required in terms of maintaining a civilization? Could that be, you know, the central purpose of having to continually put on hands?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. Yeah, it's for crowd control. It's for herd management. Yeah, I think it's all there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So a lot of the people, for example, and I'm just going to dovetail this with, let's just say, those that are of a certain faith and think that these are dark times and everything is satanic. Well, what does that speak about the creator that created the herd with these shortcomings to require all of these prodding and all the propaganda in order just to maintain any kind of civility amongst the population? Like, what does that convey about the properties of the creator and its creation that we need all of this hoaxery just to function? Like, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I feel like some of these metaphysical.
I don't like to speak about the creator because I don't know what created, and I don't want to ever. If there is a master creator, I never want to doubt his or her competence or her abilities.
Right.
I don't want to. I would never speak to that. That would be blasphemous to too many people. But I do. It is clear that humans have certain psychological weaknesses that other humans have figured out how to exploit, and they never seem to change. It could be a shortcoming in our biology or wiring, and it doesn't ever seem to get better. Even if you explain or lay out a blueprint, it can always be exploited each and every time. I still get emotional when I hear certain storytellers tell certain stories that I can relate to. it always works. And I'm, even though I know it's not my story, it's someone else's story. It's, these are just pathways in our brains that are in most of us.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't trying to be blasphemous at all. I was, it's just that if the powers that be have co-opted that power or any kind of psychological shortcomings heard.
Also, I will say that people, that humans are a social creature, so you always will end up wanting to be in some way in the comfort of the herd, I will say.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So if you were to convince enough people of something, it's self-fulfilling in the end, you know?
By the way, I would like to say happy Eid Mubarak to all our Muslim listeners. And there must be a lot of Muslims in Toronto because the traffic is outstanding tonight. So I want to say thank you. I know they're all busy praying at home, or feasting rather, now that the fast is over. And my goodness, I would say that there must be a lot of Muslims in Toronto because the highway is wide open tonight. I'm going to be home early. But happy Eid Mubarak to all the Muslims.
Yes. And bon appétit.
Yeah.
Has Toronto been crazy with the Raptors in the finals as much as they are showing that on TV with kind of finals fever?
Yeah, I think it's a Canadian thing. I think the whole country has adopted the team like they usually do. And yeah, it's I think they're playing tonight, so maybe everyone is also getting ready to watch the game. Yeah, I as much as I think sports is fixed, I know it's a great unifying pan-religious event that makes people feel good, and I don't want to ever take that away from people, but I'm still very suspicious of the scripting of Major League Sports Entertainment.
Yeah, I hear you. I still watch basketball, I love basketball, and I'm definitely suspicious of the overall apparatus, but it's still entertainment. It's still, there's still athletes that are competing with one another. I'm not so sure that they're magnetizing the basketballs to, make three-pointers go in. Yeah. That, to me, I'm not really buying it. But, it's fairly easy for them to control a game's outcome. I mean, they could just call a foul and get the players into foul trouble or turn. I mean, it's very easy to kind of conduct and compose that, the outcome, in my estimation. I'm rooting for Toronto. They laid an egg the other night, but it would be great to see if they could beat Golden State. That'd be wonderful. But anyway, I'm getting off topic.
Yes, and also on the subject of sports,
California.
No, let's talk about basketball, Dante. Do you think it would be easier to control a game by the referee getting together, deciding how they're going to call the game?
A little louder, Phoenician. You're too low. Louder,
louder, louder. Hear me now.
Stick the mic right in your mouth.
Check, check. Hello?
Still too low.
Check, check.
Turn on Windows Phone, whatever you're talking it to.
I don't know. I've got my mic right in front of me.
He sounds pretty good to me, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's just
Maybe
it's your old ears.
Maybe it's just me. Dante's very good.
Yeah, what's the easiest way to control
it? It's a rarity for my audible.
No, your mic is fantastic.
Yes, you sound great. You are the loudest of all of us here on my end.
Yeah.
I just want to thank my sponsor, Turtle Beach. I have the Turtle Beach 450. Anyway, just throw that in there. So I don't sound good. This sounds great to me. I don't know. But anyway, I was wondering about how the basketball game would be controlled. Could the referees just decide how they're going to call the game, so to speak? Like, they're going to look for this, they're going to look for that. Is that enough, if they were controlled, to make an influence that was predictable, in other words? What do you think, Dante?
I do. I think that if the league wanted to extend a series to seven games for more advertising revenue, or whether they wanted to internationalize the game and have Toronto win, the instead of having individual players like rig a game like has been found out in college and high school, even some major league sports allegedly with was it 1918 World Series with the White Sox?
Black Sox.
you know, those, yeah, those, so what the term is, so, like, what do you call a walk or travel or not call a travel or call a foul or not call a foul? It's such a gray area, and you could call, you could allow a team to be physical. You can be really tight with the whistle. And, you know, you get a team in foul trouble, it's very easy for the other team to accumulate points. You get the best players on the bench, and it doesn't look like the game is being rigged. I think that it's easier to do it almost like where the refs know implicitly what the league wants to do without it being, like, overt and there actually being any kind of dialogue between the commissioner and the board of governors and the referee council or the referee union saying, all right, we want this team to win tonight. But, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure if individual games or individual series are definitively rigged, because the gambling, all the money in gambling, like, it's mostly made on the vigorous, right? Like, whether or not one team wins or loses, like, Vegas and all the bookies are keeping a certain fixed percentage of all of the wagering, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, if there is, if on a particular game there happens to be, like, where they couldn't balance the books so that they're guaranteed their margin, I don't know. Maybe do they shift it a little bit so it falls within the point spread? I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case at all. I've seen many games where you're just like, there's no way they make this call. They know there's no way they make that call. And there's so much money at stake, and there's so much power because, you know, it's why it would be foolish for me to think that they don't have ulterior motives beyond just making money, because sports is so influential in culture. And, you know, it's impactful to individual cities. So, yeah, I don't have a specific answer, but I would say the refereeing is definitely probably the easiest way to affect the outcome. Yeah.
Well, yes, and also that's,
I think the scam. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yes, I wanted to say that just this weekend we had the biggest upset in the history of boxing, almost, with the fat Mexican guy knocking out the
Joshua.
The fit British Anthony Joshua. And that also, I think, was fixed in the sense that a rematch is will making so much money for both of those guys that I think there is no problem to fix such a thing. And also, the Mexican market is, you know, the access to the Mexican market with an heavyweight boxing champion that is Mexican, I will say that it will do a killing in the rematch, you know, in terms of money and all that.
Yeah, it introduces a fourth fighter into that mix, because previously it was Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua for the most part. When is that fight going to happen? Then you have, hold on one second, let me put myself.
Yes, and also the thing is that those guys that he was speaking about, Dante, those are the traditional profile of heavyweight boxers that we used to see as champion in the new guy is short and fat, and everyone is agreeing that even if he did beat soundly the champion, it was a fluke, you know, a lucky break. So I would think that everyone will be tuned in to see the rematch just for to see if it was a real win or if it was a fluke. So I would think that it will not be difficult at all to convince one or even both of the boxers to fix the outcome of this match. Especially the fact that I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's for certain with prize fighting. I think it's when you have millions and millions of dollars in play to one individual, and it's not dispersed throughout an entire team. Sure. And then with that fight in particular, it looked suspicious. I haven't seen the whole thing. It didn't look like Joshua was like trying as hard as I've seen him in prior fights, but. The promoter, like, they would have made more money on, who knows, who ultimately knows, but the bigger fight was the Deontay Wilder fight that hasn't happened in several years. So it seemed like they were trying to milk Joshua's fights and just continue to fill up the stadiums and have him fight weaker opponents so he could keep the belt and have that cash cow going. For him to lose, now, you know, there may not be as much money for the Deontay Wilder fight. So one could argue both ways that, like, by him losing, it affects the purse with Fury or Wilder, but I don't know. I'm not on the the inside circles of the boxing world. I definitely don't trust the fight game, but again, I still am a spectator. I love to watch the super bouts. I love, you know, if there's a good card for UFC, I'll usually check that out as well. So, you know, I who am I to judge of the normies, right? Because I still watch.
Do you care if it's good or not? Does it matter to you?
Yes,
if it's just entertainment, do you care?
To be honest, when I'm watching UFC and it's obviously fixed, I am really pissed in the end.
Really?
I thought one of Connor's fights looked, when he was knocking that guy Alvarez, that looked suspicious, like it ended too early. And it looked like Alvarez wasn't really trying. But I would prefer it not to, yeah, just in terms of would I be upset if I were to know definitively that a game was rigged? Yeah. I'd stopped watching basketball for a while after that notorious Sacramento Kings versus the Los Angeles Lakers series. Where it was just so lopsided, the calls. I think it was 2004, but 2002, I forget exactly the year, but it was just like, I was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, they still reference it to this day, like how people think it was a conspiracy. But yeah, I would rather there be competition that was genuine and authentic, and you know, the better team or the better prepared individual, the more talented individual wins. Than it.
Yes.
But I don't wager on sporting events, so I wouldn't be as disappointed, but, you know, it's...
What do you think that has something to do with it now that perhaps sports gambling is legal across the U.S., I believe? Is that something they've been priming us for, to start questioning things in order to create volatility in the gaming, in that arena? Is it all staged, in other words?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I will
maybe.
Say that one example I can give of something strange happening in sport, and I've spoken about that with Gaia before, but it was not here, so it may be worth repeating the story. But in 1974, during the World Cup,
I am here.
There was a match. Yes, he is here. So there was this match between France and Kuwait, and there was litigious decision, and the Emir of Kuwait get down to the pitch with his bodyguard pushing people around to go to the pitch. And what is hilarious is
sorry, Gareth. Yes. Let me subtitle in English here, and it's kind of ironic because English is obviously not my first language. The Emir of Kuwait entered the pitch during a football match. Please.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hi, this is Heroes from Tampa, Florida, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Thank you, Heroes, but Gareth, please finish your story.
Yes, I was saying that he entered the pitch and starting to talk with the referee as it was a casual thing to do, as if there is absolutely no problem for a head of a state to go down the pitch and speak football with the director of the game. So, and there was also a few examples of World Cup that were played under a certain political pressure in the 70s.
Johan Cruyff was excluded from the Dutch team in 78 because the Argentinians made threats to him, so he stayed home. And that's how Argentina won the World Cup in that year, because Holland was playing in the final, and Johan Cruyff was not there because of threats.
Exactly.
Sorry about the siren.
Oh, those are fake. We all know that.
No. Good try, guy.
Ab left?
Yes, I think so. So, like we're going on, I think that in the end, it's irrelevant. To the viewer, it may make the difference, but in the end, in the global view of things, it's irrelevant if sports are fixed or not, because they play their role, you know? The task is done, so... In the end, it's irrelevant. People can get up in arms for a soccer team or something like that, but They don't really care if you raise their tax or something like that. So in the end, it's like bread and games, like they said in the Roman Empire, you know?
Yeah, I only think that curling is fixed because nobody would put their body and their image in the forefront to play fucking curling.
Oh, don't say that. Swiss are so good at in this sport. I would be so disappointed if that were to be fixed.
Well, I hope Nadal. I hope Nadal wins at Roland Garros. I think that Djokovic is playing in top form this past year or two, so it's going to be hard. But that would be a shame if those matches were fixed. It doesn't seem like they are because they look like they're. I've never seen any of the Federer or Nadal or Djokovic matches that. The only one that I thought would look was suspicious was when Nadal was playing Djokovic several years ago in the U.S. Open, and you saw Djokovic picking these little like ball, like these like gel balls, and he was injured, and then all of a sudden he started playing like Popeye. So I definitely think something was suspicious in that match. But I don't know if you follow tennis, but the French Open is going on right now.
Probably had some spinach before the match.
Yeah, that's that was suspicious. But going in terms of the audio, I don't know how long these chats are. These the ones that are going on for like several hours or
whatever.
Yeah, it's 4 hours and nobody listens to it.
That's what I'm saying. I think
that John LeBron. So yeah,
except for John.
I don't know.
I was the guy. No, to be honest, I was the guy that used to listen to the 4 hours. I was one of those guys.
I don't listen to them much. I've listened to a lot of them like lately, but the ones that I've been on, I'll just go through and just, I've been on. I've listened to a couple that Jarrison, somebody did. I made some notes on it.
The reason I asked is
Dante.
Exactly. 5 minutes, so, you know, it's you're in now, Dante. You're in like Flynn. You're in like hair in a biscuit, whether you like it or not. So you think it'd be really difficult to fix tennis, though, right? I mean, that's. But what about like a more of a situational sport where it's not a dynamic, like a something like
war?
Wow, yeah. Oh god, here we go. So you think war is fixed now? You're saying absolutely straight out war is fixed.
Well, 11-11-11.
If Serena's a dude, I mean, that's one way you could say that tennis is being fixed. And
well, there's only one way to find out, and that's then guy in. Gaia, you're going
well,
in.
I suck at tennis. No way.
No, I mean to find out whether or not she's real, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, I would say that it's indiscernible at this time, you know? A few good surgery and one would never know.
Could be chemically induced as well, too. I mean, there could be some physiological
in the children.
Mostly chemical. Yeah, start them early.
Yes,
there
is a rumor about Michael Jackson that he was kind of chemically castrated when he was younger to keep his voice as low as possible.
All right, guys.
Are
you attracted to Serena Williams? Dante, are you attracted to Serena Williams?
That man? No, thanks. Oh. No, but we all know that Laura's husband is actually a woman, so she's not coming on? She's not protesting? Come on.
Oh, no, it's totally debatable. Both of our genders, it could be anything.
Yes, no, it doesn't matter because it's what you identify as.
It's an Apache helicopter, right?
Yes, I am transitioning to Chinese panda because they are protected, so maybe there is something to do with that.
Well, the reason I asked about the length of the audio chats is I notice lately I don't go through any of them, and it's tedious to skip through four-plus hours of audio to try to find good snippets that, good nuggets that have good content from any of the individuals that are participating. So I don't know what the timestamp is thus far, but if there were a couple of topics with specificity with Fakeology specificity that we could delve into a little bit more, I think that might be more interesting to the audience.
No,
yes, that's what I tend to do, is to have a subject, but we came live kind of impromptu, so...
No, you only have to listen to johnlebon.com and then you get the best snippets. And please pay $5 a week to join his site. I mean, it's great.
Well, but there is an issue, I think, with scanning through the audios. I don't know if there's another format, and it would probably be hard to grandfather them. But if you're actually just wanting to bump forward 10 minutes, it's hard because it doesn't really know whether to go to the 22nd mark or the 18th mark. And then you try, well, I'm going to go up to the 35-minute mark, and it goes to the 29. There's no – so that's, you know, it's a little minor issue. But I think it's more of a record and an archive of things if people want to go back.
Right, but if there was, like, just brief show notes over the course of, let's say, 2 to 2.5 hours of...
Yeah, like, a couple weeks ago, just fun, but I think it could be something, yeah.
No, we have questioning our reality is doing that for us.
Well, I'm,
I think that there is a lot of sense to that, and that's something that I discussed also with Laura previously, and... that is something I'm trying to do, is record the first hour on the topic that was chosen before. And then when the hour is done, or a little bit more, a little bit less, to go more to some free speech, you know, some free talk.
No, absolutely. I know that this is an impromptu chat. I'm just impromptu giving an idea of how to focus it better so that the audience might be more interested in listening and downloading it. Just from my experience, because it's not that anything that we were saying is not particularly interesting, but if we go on for 5 hours, I think people, it's easy for people to, get disengaged. So
there's a couple ideas. Go ahead. Just finish your thought. Go ahead.
No, so instead of just, just saying that without anything to offer, the Phoenician, if we could flesh out some of the things that Ab was interested in from earlier that you were trying to kind of explicate on what you felt some people's intent was beyond just the communication. Like if you wanted to explore that a little bit deeper, or if Gaia wants to explore the paywalls of content sites, or Jerris had something, those are all cool, and
we put them by the hour. Like there's no reason why we couldn't actually, let's say we agreed to meet at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and hour one we wanted to talk about topic A, hour two topic B. We don't have to be rigid, of course, because it's just organic fun discussion. We can do that on our own. I don't know that it gets posted in Fakeologist, because you got to remember this is just somebody's hobby. And I don't think he has a lot of time or money to just dump into it. If we organically can come up with solutions that we think, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be worse or better, but we can sure try.
You never know. It could be garbage. I could be, babbling incoherently.
That's all right.
Fucking moron.
It's just part of experience, and there's nothing wrong with trying.
But does it? What's required though? What is this streamer bot? Like we're in the audio chat live stream. Why does the person you said? Like I'm assuming you're referring to Ab. In terms of the time he could allocate to, but can't this be recorded without his presence?
Yeah, of course.
We did a lot of things without him being there.
You can do a solo chat like Garrus has done before.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not going to be protracted based on his availability to edit.
That's a non-factor. No. I would think that if you were to record something and be unhappy about a part, or maybe you are not sure of if it's possible that it's deleted, I think that you will do it. But apart from that, I think that it will be put out as is, like it was recorded.
Well, it's just an idea that I think that the chats could potentially be better received and... could be potentially more productive if there was some topics that everybody kind of were unpacking together.
Totally. That's something I do every Friday or so. At least I try. So I am all for that. I think that it's a great idea to have some chat on a precise subject. I think that it's the greatest thing to do.
Yeah. All right.
Because that is something that I love about this place. In the beginning, where I was listening to to so many audio that were out, and yes, most of them were directed chat on a special topic.
Yeah, I mean, because it's cool to be sociable, and right now, because I'm kind of like on the road alone, and it's cool to talk to people, especially English-speaking people that speak English, but I also, like, one of the commonalities I have with people in Fakeology, as well with JLB site, is this realm, and, you know, in terms of Fakeology, conspiracy, truth-seeking, you know, that's something we share, and there's a lot to learn from each individual and everybody's perspectives, and that resonates with me. That compels me to come back here more than, like, just shooting the shit. So anyway.
Dante, can I ask, I mean, did you talk to Mexicans? I mean, I'm not revealing anything because it was on the public channel in Discord, but did you talk to Mexicans about these kind of topics?
No, I've not brought up any of these topics except for with one woman who she was selling tours, and you know, I was flirting with her a little bit, and she then, I randomly saw her at this little salad bar by the gym that I was going to in Playa del Carmen. She just talked about how she refused to go to New York. She hates Trump and blah, blah, blah. And I tried to kind of just throw in some nuggets about how it's just all theater and there's, you know, he doesn't really hate Mexicans and he's probably employed thousands of them.
He employed them, yeah.
Exactly. So, but she's got, you know, full of rage and like, oh, I'd never go there, never even enter his building. That was the only time that it ever came up in over 2 months. So, I don't talk to anybody. I don't want to talk about any stuff with anybody. I don't really, like, it's just, but definitely it's not come up. Nobody's ever harassed me or mentioned anything to me at all. It's been very peaceful. It's been refreshing.
Nice.
Good thing about talking freely is this happens organically, so it's captured naturally. And if we had topics, it would start. It could be, but that could be something to do as a sort of mono production where you come on, for instance, maybe it's 15 minutes or something like that. But you get to find out how people think, their methods, their tone. You find out what their personalities are like. Like, I find out a lot about people just by discourse, like this gentle discourse, without having any kind of agenda, just talking, free flow. So that happens naturally. Jairus and I, he's like my friend. I consider him a friend. I've talked to Jairus for hours now. And
Yes. But I also see the point of putting something that is not that what we are speaking about is not good, but some things that is more a finite audio product, kind of, if I can say.
Sure.
You know?
Go for it.
I mean, when we talk about gays, we know that original simulant is joining, right?
Oh, hey. That is
not bad. Man. Come on.
Or someone playing him.
But like I said, I really like the idea of having a topic and really doing things in a more organized way. And I am really open to that idea. And I am at least will do that like I am doing every Friday.
There used to be a lot.
I am more than open to do that on a more regular basis if people are there.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm glad that that idea was received well, because I would love to be able to listen to more chats about Fakeology and the lie system and, you know, doing more deep dives into even some of the granular topics. I think it would be a good thing.
Yes, that would be the greatest thing to do, to choose a topic and stick to it for like here an hour, and then maybe pick another one or have a more light chat.
On that topic, Dante, I mean, you're now in Mexico. Do you know about the Aztec calendar stone?
I do not, no.
It was allegedly discovered, and it ties into John Le Bon's fakery of history and the Library of Alexandria and all that stuff. It was allegedly discovered in Mexico City in 1790, when it was already for 250 plus years a Spanish city, right? And what? It was 40 tons, the original stone.
Right.
Like, I mean, they were digging a place to build a cathedral or something, a church or something, in the Zocalo, in the center of Mexico City. What? I mean, this was going unnoticed for so many years, you know?
Yeah, one thing, I was in Mexico City for a few weeks, and I went to the historic section. There was some really interesting architecture, but just, the buildings, some of them were dilapidated, but it just, they didn't look that old. And some of the ruins that I saw in Tulum, they don't look like functional cities or villages. They just like, there's these steps, but they don't look like anybody was living in them. And again, they, in terms of the how worn does do certain stones, how worn should stone structures be over time in terms of erosion? And I don't know. It's just where are all the bodies buried? You know, do all the bones of the buried bodies disintegrate into the ground after 50 to 60 years? You know, these, I don't know. But it.
Yeah, for Yucatan, where you were, I mean, the narrative is, of course, that the Mayan civilization already was breaking down when the Spanish came there, as opposed to the Aztecs in central Mexico, where they say, no, that was a flourishing and very warlike and sacrificing culture, civilization there. But for me, I mean, this point of this calendar stone, it was like, oh, wait a minute. They found it just 250 years later. I mean, it's not something you cherish if you're a civilization and you have a calendar and all in jade. So.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support. In my dream, I have a plan.
If I got... We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is Just Saying Dude, and I am speaking to you from New Zealand, and I'm telling you that if you want to get the real oil, you need to listen to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Thank you, Just Saying Dude. It's been away for almost a year now.
Interesting.
Yes, people come and go from these places. But we were going on Asian Needle Story, and I think that it's a great subject. And many things could be said about the fact that even there in Europe, you get a lot of castles that looked too brand new and untouched. And yes, like you said, some of those things, you would think that no one was living there never, because it made no sense to be set up that way.
Right. So, Gaia, but one question I have for you, I don't know if you're being tongue-in-cheek with some of the comments you've had with John, History is a Hoax, quote-unquote, Laban. What you have suspicions about this story in central Mexico, the Aztec stone, do you then, what judgments do you make about the official version of history based on that story and other ones? I mean, are you open-minded?
No. Yeah, oh, very much, and I like the fact that John intends to trigger people into rethinking history. I really love that. What my problem is, if he proclaims that history is just 200 years old, then he goes on the same trolling tactic, but that doesn't take away the fact that the so-called evidence for the Library of Alexandria or Roman civilization or Greek civilization or pharaohs or pyramids and all kind of things are subject to investigation and finding out what actually happened, or mostly what didn't happen.
Right. Well, it's beyond just subject to investigation. It's the fact that those original sources for all those stories don't go back more than a couple hundred years. So why even assume that any of the stories that were being told have any validity whatsoever?
Jerry said, castles. I mean, if you go to Europe, you've got a lot of castles there. And some may be faked in a modern day. That could be, yeah. But most of the buildings are really old. I mean, geologic erosion, the whole history around it. And it's too easy to just proclaim, yeah, they're just 200 years old. And somehow, 200 years ago, someone started building hundreds of castles in Europe. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So there's a middle ground there.
Right.
Trying to find out what is actually real and what is old. And I myself, I've looked into the maps of exploration. You know, I mean, the maps they used for exploring the New World and Antarctica and Australia and all these kind of things. And I like that because that is, that was the key to finding out the new exploration, the new areas. And one of the maps is, for me, it's a clear fake. And that's the Peary Rise map. Everybody in conspiracy circles talks about that as if it is, they assume it's real, and they say that, yeah, there are animals living in Antarctica because they show animals on this map. But this map was discovered in the Topkapı Palace in Istanbul, then Constantinople, in 1929, and this map was allegedly from a Ottoman explorer called Peary Rise in 1513. So for 416 years, this map was so-called stored in this palace, and nobody looked at it, nobody took care or whatever, and suddenly they found out about that map. Well, if the map would be real, and the Ottomans at that time was the biggest empire in the world, even bigger than Spain, then if that would be true, and there was really a Turkish Ottoman explorer going to South America and even discovering Antarctica, then if that would be true, then there would be now everybody in Brazil would be speaking Turkish, let's say, right? I mean, there would be a huge empire founded. But that was not the case. So I regard this map that is very neatly painted, very perfect. It stands out, and that's why all these conspiracy channels use it. It's very beautiful, not as the other maps of that era. Also the 416 years after the so-called event happened, then it was discovered. I think that's a fake, a clear fake.
Right. Well, how are they verifying that it was 400 years plus prior? How do they keep the paper intact in terms of preventing oxidation and wear? But let's just focus it back on the buildings. So we have these old castles. The assumption is that humans built and, you know, engineered and got the materials to build the castles.
Yeah.
But in terms of population estimates, where the evidence of the bodies are that lived in those little villages or occupied the castles, and the documentation of custodianship of from generation to generation.
Let me ask you, Dante. How do you think? I have no idea about these castles, how they built that shit. All I know is about like what's right now, right? So how do you think in 500 years they'll know that you ever existed? What's the evidence right now that you exist that 500 years from now they'll say, well, this is proof Dante was real? What is the proof right now that exists that you can say, well, for fucking sure, they're going to say, yeah, that's, you know, they'll be able to see that slam dunk and it's totally unchallengeable. What do you think that is, though?
I don't know if it'll be unchallengeable. There's a record of my birth
Why do you think that record will exist in perpetuity for 500 years? You don't think they'll throw it away after 200, maybe? Or?
I'm not sure. In terms of digital archiving, I can't answer that question as to what would happen in 500 years from now. I'm not making a definitive claim that there weren't people 500 years ago. I'm just saying that, you know, if we're going to be...
Hey, Russ, we want to hear your opinions on something, or I do anyway. I think Dante would probably like to hear it. So we keep getting back to what this concept of the witness is and why everything is alleged in these events. And I think you just hit it home, right? You just hit it out of the park there. Like, how can we prove that Dante was real? Like, we hear him now. We hear some representation through these zeros and ones, right? But how can we even say he was real in 20 years or 30 or 100 years? Like, what is that? Is there an existential exercise going on here, you know, between us and these controllers that live on a castle with a big moat around it? See, they ain't no gate. They're on a big, in a big castle, and there's a separation. But you know what I'm saying, though, we don't cross the moat.
But the point is, if it's not true, and it's open to me, then what is the alternative? Give an alternative explanation.
That's one issue I disagree with you, Guy. Why do you need an explanation? I don't have to, like, I don't have to supply an alternative explanation. If you require one,
then you go on the defensive, and it's not like I require that from you. That's not what I'm asking. But if I proclaim that 6 million Jews didn't die in the Holocaust, then it's my job or my task to make the case, at least do some work, do some effort to show, okay, what then happened with those people. And that is the same thing I apply to everything. If it's not the mainstream explanation, then make a case, just like Simon Shek did with his September clues, make the case, okay, what did happen then?
So there's a gradient, a big, long, wide band.
Of course, there always
of
is.
This,
yeah.
From left to right, if you put it in a picture in front of us. And there's truth and lie, there's real and fake, and then there's this gradient. And where are you when you get hit with something? If a car is coming at you and you don't get out of the way, you're a freaking solipsist, right? Or whatever. If you say, well, I'm going to stay here because, well, you know what? It might keep that ant from, you know, or whatever, from hit, or maybe keep the store from getting hit, so this person will swerve and miss me. That's because I'm an altruist and I really empathize with the people around me. So what is happening in this exercise, this experience that we are growing up with or we're living in, and how does that compare with the past? And what did they go through? Because that's who's laying this down. These are the teachers. It's the path. Russ and I were talking about time.
You can break it down very easily. I mean, if you say that 9/11 was a film set, a movie set, that was prepared years in advance and all that, and let's say nobody died, nobody got hurt, then people will ask, okay, but what did happen then? And then you make a case, and that is what Simon Shek did, and I think that should be the standard of real research.
Okay, well, good start. I mean, we've got plenty of time to add to it, though. I mean, he certainly sacrificed a lot of his time, some of his resources, and reached out to Hoy. If you know the history, if you've listened to audios, Dante, I encourage you to go back and listen to audios. There are people who really worked hard to try to explain this, and we in some ways have as living, breathing people to do what they did if something does come up, especially next year in 2020 in hindsight. So just to make you aware, if you're awake, super triple duper awake, like me, I'm the world's leading realist, okay, you know what I mean? So, but that's, I think something coming.
And yeah, but it comes back to the question I asked Dante. It is, what is your toolbox? And I think the main toolbox should consist of basic real science, not scientism, real science, like physics, like 9/11 planes, Apollo, all that stuff, logic, and the boomerang effect. So if they claim something in their story which contradicts other claims in their same story, it means their story isn't straight.
Right.
And can I explain or prove anything? No, I don't have the data. I don't have the bodies. I don't have the images. I wasn't alive on 500 years ago. All that stuff. That's fine. I mean, we need to be clear about our own limitations. But what we can do is use their own claims against them. It's the boomerang effect.
Could you?
And I think that is very strong.
Maybe you talk a little bit more about that Perry Reese map.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if it really existed since 1513, how can it be that it was only so-called discovered in 1929? Like in the past, people wouldn't cherish old heritage and old architecture and art and things. It's ridiculous, man. To quote John LeBone.
All I can say is that the guy has a nice statue in Istanbul. And I've seen it myself.
Yeah, so why does Brazil not speak Turkish then, right? I mean, that's the implication of it. Think about the implications of anything. And then I think that there's a huge ground to gain there. And if really there would be a Turkish Ottoman explorer in this 16th century that made a map of South America very accurately and of Antarctica, which wasn't discovered at that time, why were there no military forces going to Patagonia, which was completely uninhabited by Western forces at that time? Why is there no colony there? Why is nothing there? It doesn't make sense.
Okay, but let me. We have the written documents, and you know their authenticity, and how to determine their age. Okay, and then you bring up buildings and the age of these castles. We could also go into the Seven Wonders of the World and some of these more famous monuments. If we're going to operate under the assumption that humans constructed these physical, buildings, structures, at what date did they do that if there's no historical record? Reliable historical archives that can show beyond a reasonable doubt that they were done at, let's just say, the 11th century or the 13th century. You go by the, erosion of the physical materials, and then what source, material can we have witnessed over the course of 800 plus years that can show that this parallels the, the depreciation, for lack of a better word, the depreciation of the building over that length of time.
Weathering.
The weathering of the building over the length of time, how can we really have a benchmark for that, close to a millennia, let's say, period. We don't have that.
We have buildings and structures and rock, stone, that we can analyze and extrapolate. I mean, it's a model. It's extrapolating what we see, like erosion in 30 years, we can be sure about, right? I mean, we have lived for 30 years, so we can see that, and it's real. So you extrapolate that kind of erosion effect and then take into account past climate and precipitation and all that stuff.
Similar.
Yeah, of course. I mean, history is full of assumptions. That's fine, as long as it's clear that it's an assumption.
Well, but why does it need to be an assumption if it's a record?
I would say something. I would say that Switzerland is one of the oldest countries, if not the oldest country in the world, and there is a lot of written record, not from the time, at least not that much, but from the time after that, and those are not really...
What?
I'm sorry, you broke up on me.
He's back.
Come on, knowledge, you know?
I don't know what you said. You said there's a lot of records of...
I'm sorry, I was cut up. I will say that at least in Switzerland, we have a lot of paper, of record of event on paper, and you know, even some kind of population census and those kind of things. We had a lot of written history that is not that much debated as being real or fake in the end.
It's not debated in traditional academic circles, or it's not debated amongst people who are questioning official history?
There is a little bit of debate, but it's mostly about a big historical event and not more about the big narrative, kind of.
What documents are you referring to, and how old are they being claimed to be? From, is it at like the local library, or?
No, from a historical museum and all of those kind of places. So I am not saying that there is any truth to it. It's just that if the point is that there is absolutely no record that goes beyond 200 years, I will say that here in Switzerland we had a lot of it.
But you could just say it was fake, just like he's saying, well, how do you know it's not fake?
You have buildings.
But it's just like the birth certificate example.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is 12X42 Nikon. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
So if the birth certificate example did not make it for some record proving he existed, 500 years from now they could just say it's fake too. But yet we know Dante exists, right?
That's a story. That would be your story then, though. That's his story. It's history. So a building or a monument is tangible.
Yeah. You can go through exactly.
So
yeah.
Define history.
I'm tangible.
So let's take 30 minutes and define history. Let's talk to see about what is history, because most of what we are calling reality has already happened because we are in the moment.
We're in the moment too.
No, but that's the thing. I mean, if it's tangible, like, I mean, Dante, you have been to Chichen Itza probably. I mean, if it was not built somewhere in the 15th or earlier century, then when was it built? Make a case for that alternative. And that's my point on everything.
That's I am not going to.
You're starting to sound like John LeBron. You seem like you're a skeptical guy. Is he getting to you?
No, I'm just curious because I know, like, so I know this is about 10, 12 years ago. I remember my godmother had been putting together a family history, and you know, everybody's interested. They said that our particular family had gone back to the 1500s, could be traced back to the 1500s with in somewhere in Spain and this and that. But I just know that she was really never able to get a lot of documentation, like from grandparents and whatnot. It was just, a lot of it was speculative past a couple hundred years. So it's not that I'm adopting JLB's model. I'm just curious as to how we would authenticate the dates of the buildings, how, you know, what benchmark building can we say is 1,000 years old that we have observed the weathering. If we can only observe the weathering over a course of, let's say, a century, can we extrapolate what it would be over 800 years? And if so, what kind of conviction do we have that those castles are from the 1200s?
Okay. My position is, if not, then provide a better alternative.
I will also say that we can isolate by the building technique sometimes that this building must be older than this period because since then we never used this technique. So
yeah.
I will not say that we can for sure say that the building is 800 years old, but we can at least say that it was built like at least 500 years before, because those kind of techniques or this material or this engineering was not used since then. So we know at least that it was older than a certain period, I will say.
I'm just still not clear with Gaia why I have to come up with an alternative model that's better or accept.
I mean, you take it defensively as if it's...
I'm not being defensive. I'm saying you're from your position, whether it's me or anybody else, I'm not saying it's a personal thing. If this isn't it, you got to come up with a better alternative. It's, well, just because you reject something on good on
sound, you still have to explain the observation, the data.
They got to find the real killer before OJ can go free.
No, and that's a wrong comparison. I have heard that before. It's a wrong comparison. Because all these facts are restricted to a certain group of people. A building, a castle, we can see with our own eyes. We don't need authority to go there. We can see it with our own eyes.
We can see it with our own eyes, but if the documentation of that building is the only production of papers that we can find are, let's say, a couple hundred years old, why then are we accepting that person's estimate of when it was originated, when that cathedral was built, when that castle was built? Why are we just accepting that?
It's not okay to extrapolate geologic erosion for hundreds of years, but it is okay to use a certain narrative, like Tutankhamun's mask, which is a clear fake, and then extrapolate it for hundreds of years for every castle, every building you see in the world.
New evidence
is not going to be an old record. If a record is actually determined to be correct and the story is in keeping with what you can tangibly see, like as far as the building, and everything lines up, okay, and if somebody rejects that record comes into question, and Guy's way of saying find the alternative, the alternative is now created in this moment, and now it has to be recreated. So you're trying to get new evidence for something that you can't, because you can't be in two places at once. You can't be in the past. And then,
it's like sprinkle theory.
That's why we're trying to discuss here. I'm trying to support both sides to facilitate more conversation.
When you attack the source.
But if you accept that the pyramids, those are flagrant lies, well, why then, if that is official history, why then accept official history of castles from the 12th century?
No, exactly. I don't think that the pyramids are flagrant lies. I mean, nobody has ever presented the case how they built in Napoleon times a pyramid of 100 meters high. Same thing.
If I came up with some documents with a certain date on it, you would believe those, right? I can make those up.
No, I don't believe anything about it, but I want to know, then, if it's not 2,500 years old, which I'm open to accept, then please provide a case how they built it in Napoleon times, that's the narrative that's going on now, that they faked it back then. So how did they do it? What machines did they use? I mean, still, it's an amazing piece of artwork. You cannot deny that. So how did they did it then if they didn't do it 2,500 years ago?
If the pyramids were fake and supposedly built during Napoleon time, but the pyramids are fake, then ergo Napoleon times are fake too. See where we're at now?
Yeah, really? So because 9/11 is a hoax, George W. Bush never lived? I mean, come on.
And neither did George Washington. See?
What if they carved them out of a mountain of sand and rock 100,000, 150,000 years ago? Little bit at a time, and that land eroded and sloughed off into the Nile River little by little, so that the actual relief from the river to the top of the pyramids where it began, where they started to dig it out, went down by 400 feet or whatever it is, right? Whatever the
height. I mean, it's good. I mean,
because I want someone to explain to me how that's not possible. At least
exactly. I mean, that is the thing. The same standards apply. It doesn't matter if it's a conspiratorial explanation or if it's a mainstream explanation. You shouldn't change standards. The standards still stay the same. How did they do it? Make the case.
Well, the standards really should improve through time. Like, if we are more sentient,
then
we should be improving the standards by which things are real. And we're sloughing off the last vestiges of that ability because of the way media works.
If the pyramid's fake, the pyramid's media too. But if the pyramid was fake, then the standards are fake too.
that back, yeah, the, yeah, their standards had changed. Now we would have new standards where we faked something, and then 100 years from now, the standards would be different, and something might be completely digital. The coming.
I mean the standards.
Unicorn.
No, I mean the standards on the basis of which you can say something is fake or not fake. Those standards should be the same for mainstream and for alternative explanations.
Maybe they've never changed that at all. Can I just play that? Maybe they've never been. Maybe it's only been the same ever since whoever, the Egyptians, the Phoenicians.
That's true. The standard is authority. That's what makes the story. Is it, you know, some true.
No, the scientific standards. I mean,
well,
that's the history. That's the history of it. So, but what I'm saying, what if the person has always known the truth? The person, no matter where they are. What if it's always known the truth? It just doesn't realize.
I will break it down even further. I mean, you have 40 ton blocks, which constitute the pyramids of Giza, right? So, the same question applies. How did the slaves, slaves in 2,500 years ago transport those blocks? That same question is, how did the soldiers of Napoleon transport those blocks? That's the same question.
No, because they were giants. No, that's what you're not understanding. They were giants back then. Therefore,
that's a claim.
Using real men. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Substantiate that claim.
But, yeah, fine. I mean, we can't. Yeah. Well, we may be able to. We just don't know it yet. We just haven't... it hadn't been introduced as a damn alternative theory yet. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go start a website. Alternative theory. Giants built the pyramid.
A drag out of mummy. One of those redheaded Chinese mummies with six fingers and toes.
Sure.
And then they'd say it was fake. So probably
there's even more amazing things. All those statues that the Chinese built in that big, looks like a warehouse now. What do you call that? What do they call it?
The one in China.
Mannequin.
The one in China.
The hidden city or whatever. But that place is a hoax, too.
Great Wall.
The army of 700,000 soldiers in China. That smells like a hoax as well.
China's
Has any of you ever been to the Great Wall and walked on the Great Wall? I'm starting to wonder.
Oh, yeah. Original simulant is a mason, and he built it.
Every bride, brick, Dante, I was there for each one. I can testify under oath.
Well, there's now Great Wall of India. I don't know if you've seen that one.
India's a hoax, too. It's just the Mexico of the South.
No, please, Dante, please explain.
No, I've never heard of it. I have a lot of South Asian friends and particular Indians, and none of them have ever heard of this Great Wall of India. And I'd only came...
No, I don't know it, no. I know about the Great Wall of Mexico, but...
Yes, there's a...
Sorry. No, I'm really interested, Dante, please.
I don't know that much about the Great Wall of India other than that there's this huge, allegedly 15th century fort with a 22-mile perimeter that says it's the Great Wall of India. And, again, you know... When I was in high school and we'd be studying Gandhi and watching Passage to India, and then later on, I'd become friends with a bunch of South Asian males, females, whatever, and not that that necessarily would mean that this wall never existed, but I just never heard of it before. It was just bizarre that, like, in the last year or so, I came to learn that there was this Great Wall of India, and I'd asked all of my... friends, like not all of them, but you know, half a dozen. I was like, oh, you know, anything in particular in India? And like, none of them had ever heard of this Great Wall in India.
So what is it? Describe it shortly.
Can I just say something real quick on the Wikipedia page?
You can Google it. I mean, I'm not going to be able to do it. I just there are a couple of points. One, what you know, this I don't know if this had been around since the 15th century. Why was it never mentioned whenever we used to always hear about the Great Wall of China? Like, if there was this Great Wall of India, so who knows when this thing was constructed? I don't.
On its Wikipedia page, it says the early history of the fort, because it's a fort and the walls are all around it, the fort could not be ascertained on account of lack of evidence.
That's a good start. Yeah. Okay.
And if you look at some of the
where is it? Is it in the west in Gujarat?
It's called KUMBH. Goddamn. GRFTH. I mean.
So where is it? Where? Which
one? Goddamn, I don't know. Fuck, I don't know. I'm not from there. Only my servants are from there. I'm not home yet.
Okay, so can I add something about this, the wall? Okay, so the border between America and Mexico, we know that there are sections that are impassable, essentially. Then there's at least a little bit of wall that juts out into the ocean right there in Tijuana. You've got to swim out pretty far. It'd be a silly thing to do, right, because there's everybody's walking. So you can go around the outside and you can swim around it if you don't mind getting eaten by sharks or whatever, Border Patrol picking up in a Coast Guard, whatever. Okay, let's establish that. Okay, so but then you get going and there might be some wall. There's some wall there somewhere, right? Has anybody seen a wall? I have. I've been down there. Okay, but at some point there's not going to be a wall. And then there's all this talk about the wall. And then there's all these walls around the world. And there's all these walls in your mind. So what is the wall? Like, what is it really? What is it really? And I'll leave you with that.
Yeah, but, I mean, we can see the Great Wall of China, so-called, but it's real. It's a building. It's stone. It's constructed. That's real.
Right, but the question is, when was it built?
No, that's good. That's good. But at least we can establish this first point.
Okay.
Same with the castles, the same with the Aztec calendar stone, the pyramids, Machu Picchu, Nazca lines, whatever. I mean, it's the same thing.
Well, I mean, the question in terms of the Great Wall of China is...
At same least there is physical evidence. That's the thing.
I don't know what you're talking about with physical evidence. Nobody's questioning whether or not the Wall of China exists or not. We're talking about... The date, if we're using the calendar that we're all agreeing to.
The Ellora case in India, what Tertamine posted in the chat. We have a sunken city in Japan. We have a sunken city in India. We have a sunken city between Yucatan and... there are so many places on Earth that are mysterious. And it's very easy to just call it a hoax and then... you're finished. But it is not a very intelligent...
I don't think that's what Dante's trying to...
I'm not calling it a hoax. I'm asking what you had mentioned earlier. I'm just trying to anchor the discussion because we're kind of deviating a little bit, which is good, but you had mentioned about the questioning of these of that map, and a lot of these things are suspicious. Library of Alexandria hoax, that the history...
Sorry, you wrote that down.
Excuse me?
Is it me or is Garrus? Are you still hearing Dante?
I hear Dante. Yes. He hasn't broken up at all.
Hello?
Hello?
I hear you.
Yes, I can hear you just fine though.
Okay, I don't know. I was trying to mute another channel because it keeps getting these little notifications, but I don't know if that muted me here. What I'm trying to do is anchor the discussion with and come to some general consensus on the dating methodology of these buildings and these monuments, and whether we can discern by erosion and by other methods whether we can have a reasonable date range of when they were constructed, assuming, let's just operate under the assumption that human beings assembled the materials and built them. And, you know, if we look at some of the photographs on the Great Wall of China, assuming that there was, I don't know if there was documentation that there was any restoration over the centuries, but, I mean, do these things look like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old? I don't know. I mean, I've seen brick buildings from the, like, brownstones and townhouses that after 100 years are uninhabitable in New York. Now,
yeah, but that's the thing, Dante, not to patronize, but you and John Le Bon, you are from young countries. I grew up in Europe. Jarvis is from Europe. And even in Mexico, you have older buildings than you have there in the U.S. So it's easy to use your own experience and project it to everything else in the world. And that is not justified.
I agree with you, but you know, just in terms of my experience in Cartagena and in Mexico City, the same thing applies. Like there's nothing indicative, and I'm not even advocating that it's like everything just popped into existence 200-300 years ago. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, how can we reliably, if we know all these hoaxes that the hoax masters and the powers that be are playing on the masses, why are we all of a sudden going to accept their version of history?
And then it's a dialectic that John loves to put out. It's either or, and it's not either or. There are many other possibilities. And explore those, and I will pay your website. I will go and pay your website.
I don't need a website. We could explore it right here on Fakeologist Discord. I'm not.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist audio chat on Fakeologist.com.
We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hi, this is Dave J. from California. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Yes, you are. Okay, guys, I have to leave now, so I wanted to say goodbye. And I wanted to ask if someone would be kind enough to do a bit of timestamp for the show notes when the show will be out. I did it from a minute 1 to 1 hour 45 in, and I will send them to Ab. So if one of you would be kind enough to pick it up from here, it will be very, very good.
Yeah, I will. I mean, at 7:01, Paige Sheil Garris joins. Yes.
Thank you very much. So have a nice chat, and it's great to have that many people here and having a good discussion. I love it. I'm very happy. Hey, and
guys, have good luck. I've got to talk more about that fucking Perry Reese map, too, in a minute.
I will write that down. So, bye, everyone, and have a nice chat.
Yeah, you too. Good night, man.
Thank you.
So, Gaia, with regard to the dialectic, that you're assuming that entering into a binary discussion, I don't believe so, and I don't think I need to have any kind of membership site to explore these other possibilities. So we could have a free discussion right here in the live stream. What else do you posit in terms of other explanations? Let's just say a random wild explanation is that these were constructed by non-human entities, by some other program. Okay. Okay, I'm saying you could reject it whole cloth. You could reject that possibility whole cloth. But
yeah, well, I do that on the basis that I don't believe in space travel, not for humans and not for any other alien species alike.
Well, I'm not talking about I'm not talking about extraterrestrials. I'm saying if this realm were created by some entity,
okay, give me fossils, give me evidence.
Well, I'm not even talking about a sentient creature. I'm saying that if we're in some type of program, which, and I'm not even going to say simulation, but let's just say whatever created this thing.
Okay, I quote John Le Bon. What's your evidence for that?
I'm not saying I have evidence for it, but you're talking about possibilities beyond yes or no, and I'm saying, I'm throwing out a possibility. My purpose in throwing out that possibility was not to advocate for it, but to introduce a possibility. You have another possibility that you might conceive of. But what I'm saying is we still haven't kind of isolated the issues around the dating of the structures, the dating of the wall of Great Wall of China, the Great Wall of India, the castles. Okay, so the hieroglyphics, like how does the paint withstand centuries of weathering? We know that a lot of these other things are hoaxes. Like, so if we're coming into a framework of No, I'm just saying, like, let's focus on the dating and how we would arrive at a reasonable explanation for how old some of these structures are.
You just said something about the painting and how it would survive the weathering. So that this kind of has an operating assumption that you believe that paint and weather will have some kind, or weather will have some kind of adverse effect on paint, which I'm going to deduce is from some kind of observational evidence. So, if you can, like, in your own mind, you can think, you can apply that, right? Like you say, I've seen this, so, you know, then you're going to, like, extrapolate over 500 years, it would be worse based on my seeing it happen over a five-year model, right? I mean, that's not that reasonable to start.
Yeah, and the same
standard, by centuries, right?
And the same standard stands for alternative as for mainstream explanation. Same thing for paint degradation, same thing for buildings, erosion, anything.
Okay,
okay, so like you could say like, okay, I've seen it do this much in 2 days, or let's say a year or something. And 1 year it's gone from here to here. Would you think that in 10 years it would be a severity, you know, of the 1 year times 10, more or less? You say that would be, I'm not even asking you if you would, you know, like, seriously do it, but, you know, you would think that would be a somewhat reasonable, you know, path to take. Or maybe you wouldn't, I don't know. But I would think that's kind of a reasonable, you know, route.
Let me just jump in real quick. Guy, like, again, and it's not me being combative or confrontational at all. I'm impartial to whether the world is a billion years old or 300 years old. I mean, it's still a mystery to me one way or the other. But with regard to the documentation of these old cities, for example, I may be naive because I'm from a new country or whatever. Let's just assume that I go and we visit one of these castles together, and the oldest deed that is observable, that can be authenticated, goes back to the 1700s. And that deed, somebody extrapolated this must have been written in the 11th century. Okay, so, like...
I see your point. And that is why everything before human, before the printing press kind of age, like 1400, let's say, I look at very suspiciously.
Okay.
But that is not the same as claiming 200 years. I mean, sorry, John, but no.
I'm not, but you're making me, I'm sorry.
No. I know you don't claim that. I'm not putting that to you, but.
Okay, but what else? All right, so forget, but what else? Okay, we would have gravestones or any kind of ritualistic burial procedure. I mean, that's something that we see humans across civilizations doing, right? We see burials. Okay, so. Could we assess or estimate how many people were living in this particular community back then at around that time of when the castle was? Like, I'm just throwing out different.
No, it's good. Yeah, I mean, there's no battle involved. Anyway, I mean, I may sound like a contrarian, but that's how I am. So
I don't mind contrarian.
But you make a good point. But that's the other. That's also what people have put out against fossils, and that is actually we talked about, or I mentioned. That was when we know each other. It's from John LeBone's video in his YouTube comments, where you asked me. So you believe that the 9/11 deaths are real too? Do you remember?
You have to. Can you prompt me?
It was on dinosaurs.
I understand, but with regard with 9/11 deaths.
Yeah, no, that was just mentioning it. I mean, that's how you and me got to know each other. Let's say.
Okay, I have to. I mean, there's a lot of different comments, so if I can.
No, I understand, man. No problem. No, but that's the same thing. I mean, if you look at the current world population, I mean, like, everybody lives like 80 years, more or less, and there's like 8 billion people. Okay, we can debate that, blah, 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 but there at least are a lot of people. But if you look in the ground, there are not like 8 million skeletons, or 8 million, or 8 billion times 200 bones to be found. So, how can you assess how many people lived in the past in a certain age if we know, and then again, it's extrapolating what we know about today, How can you know how many people live at a certain time?
Right, but let's just specifically talk about one of those castles. I don't know, I don't have a specific one in mind, but I would just like to isolate on one of those castles. It could have been abandoned, right? So that's a possibility. But let's just say it was not abandoned, and in that geographic territory, we found no human skeletons, then we're getting into, forget about fossilization, but like, what if they
like bones, like normal bones.
Okay, yeah. So how are we going to, then we get into the dating method of those bones, and how we know that they're 800 years old versus 300 years old.
Yeah, and then we get into isotopes that some people don't believe in and all that stuff. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, okay, and then the same, I mean, I stick to my same point. If isotopes don't exist, okay, then what are the people who are measuring isotopes measuring then, if it's not isotopes?
Why would there be so many bodies anyway? I'm curious about that. Why wouldn't they just decompose?
Well,
bones are really hard to decompose.
Not really. You know, see, the world would be littered with bones if they weren't going to decompose.
Yeah, OS, that's the point. If the world would be littered, they'd be littered with bones.
If they didn't decompose, or if they weren't carried off by animals or broken down by microbes and all that stuff.
Yeah, but, okay, again, look at today. How many bones are there and how many people have lived? Same thing.
It's a different thing, but I mean, they're buried in coffins and stuff. But, like...
Well,
yeah, that's the argument. Decompose still, right?
I mean, right, but slower. But
that's the argument. But henceforth, the skeptical lens on history.
No, and I like that. I love it. But it doesn't mean that skepticism should stop at questioning. It also goes to answering, and that is my point with John Le Bon. He is really good at questioning, but very bad at answering.
Right, but this has nothing to do with John Le Bon. I know
this, but there is a certain
similarities into the questioning. Yeah. Sure, but that's what drew me in, because I think I've been very similarly since I was a kid. Not as sophisticated as I think I may be today, and I have a lot more ways to go, but I mean, I was questioning history when they were telling me the documentation of Christ, and
I understand, man. Same thing, yeah, I understand.
And Josephus, and like, nobody could give me an accurate date on like when the actual gospels were written, and then who reported on it. And it's just like, it sounds like this, I was in like fourth grade, and I'm like, this doesn't make sense. But that aside, forget about JLB, forget about, answers,
okay,
but the answer, you're saying that the questioner needs to supply the answer because the answer has been given by the authorities that say that it's in the 11th century, and
the main point is, okay, we have all seen the footage of 9/11, and if someone says nobody died, nobody was hurt, there were no planes, it was not 19 hijackers who you know, the official story, then make the case for what could have happened then. And it doesn't need to be like completely caved, carved in concrete, complete, every point fixed and all that, but at least make the case for something. That's my point.
Okay. But basically you want a replacement of the story that the authorities have given us for...
Yeah, and that is the wrong wording. It is an explanation for observation. It's not a story. A story can be anything. It can be something... about something completely where there's no data at all.
But are you dissatisfied with the explanation of, yeah, we see this building, we don't know what date it arrived here, and I'm not...
Yes, yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yeah.
But what would satisfy you?
That depends on what someone has to say.
But if that story can't be corroborated, because if there was...
No, no, but... Yeah, I've looked at the video on the Tutankhamun mask, right? I'm not an Egyptologist, I'm not an archaeologist, I'm not an expert in that field. But what he pointed out there made sense. It made sense. It was logical, and the methodology and all that. Same with Simon Shek's September Clues. It makes sense. So it depends, and my standards are not other people's standards. Other people may be happy with other standards, that's fine. I mean, I'm not speaking of authority or anything. No, it's just my own thing.
Okay. I think that if more people were comfortable with not having an explanation, I think it would be easier to persuade others to be open-minded to the deception and some of the hoaxes and et cetera and so forth. But I think it's because they prefer an explanation to no explanation, they'll outright reject all the problems with...
And that is the diversion. That is the exact diversion I have, because I am of the I want an explanation point.
Oh, fair enough. At least you're being forward with that.
It's like Indiana Jones trying to swap the idol out, you know?
With
you
the sand,
you got to have the idol ready to get there right away, or you're fucking fucked, you know what I mean?
You're certainly fucked metaphorically, because you'll have arrows thrown in your direction.
And the big stone ball.
Well, no. It was good, but to lighten up a little bit. Now we've gotten conversationally to this point. Other people may be able to add things going forward, but I think even if it's just kind of like a compass in this particular topic, in terms of dating, in terms of the history, I think it would be good for the Fakeology universe if we kind of again do a deep dive into each of these topics a little bit further, and then gain a certain ground, and then.
I agree.
I think you can logically infer that that you're going to come to the conclusion there's no certainty on anything. I mean,
no, and that's the baseline.
It's okay. Like you're saying, the no position is fine, otherwise you're just going to believe what you want to believe.
We had these discussions about the stars. And people claiming, yeah, they're just lights in the sky. Yes, they are lights in the sky, but there is something more as well. And please explain those observations.
Such as what? I don't know.
I mean, you can measure, chromatography. You can measure the different... intensities and frequencies of light, waves, and all that stuff. I mean, there is more to it than just light in the sky. Mars is different than Jupiter, right? I mean, it's...
You're talking about the individual properties of the lights.
There are differences between them. So, if you are saying it's just light in the sky, that's an easy escape. But then, think further. Go on. I mean, be challenged.
Sure. One thing that I've noticed, it's very crude, but when I was in Mexico City, I'd never seen the moon directly overhead, right? Where it was literally directly above me. I'd never been in any part of the country or anywhere that was the case.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting, and it was some bizarre experiences at night just looking at the moon.
And the angle as well, right? I mean, you see, normally in the U.S., you see a certain angle, just same in Holland, right? I mean, it's northern hemisphere. You see a certain angle, and then suddenly when you go south, the angle changes.
Yes, and I noticed some strange things with the sun as well when it was setting and there was cloud cover. And it almost seemed like the sun was like this portal, perfectly the ring around it was perfectly a 360 circle. And then I'd never seen this before in the Northeast, up in New York, or even when I'd been in California. But I've never been looking as closely. But material differences between the moon and the sun, for sure, as well Sirius and what they say is Mars and whatever else. I'm not disputing that. I just I doubt I'll ever know what they're actually composed of. In terms of what was your overall point, though?
No, but that is great, and I've been confused by defending the mainstream, and I'm not. I'm just questioning.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hello, I'm Rachel. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Thank you, Rachel from Liverpool. Please come back. There are too few females around here.
What's your I was in Colombia twice. Have you looked at the sun other than just?
Oh man, of course, yeah. Oh, now the sun not so much, but the skies. Oh yes, and I've seen the Southern Cross from here, from the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
Right, and it is of course because the Southern Cross is not exactly at the southern pole like Polaris is, right? In the north. But there's one thing I found out in my channel. I have got a known channel, and we talked about it. And it's actually strange that the sun and the moon and the planets and so they change through the year because of the allegedly the Earth's orbit around the sun, right?
Right.
And the position, the angle of the Earth changes as well. You have seasons, like the sun is above Rio de Janeiro and the sun is above Mexico City in winter versus summer thing. But then, if that is true, then also the position of Polaris, which is the easiest one, should change as well. It should change from, when seen from here, like close to the equator, close to the horizon at 0 degrees, and then it should go up 23.5 degrees in winter or summer. Like, you know what I mean? And it doesn't happen. That is strange. So there is something curious about that.
For sure. I've always found it bizarre that, let's just say it's 1 o'clock in New York City, and it's same time in Florida, and let's just even say a time zone, even in Colombia, it could be completely sunny out, but the sun, if you're in one part, it looks like it, like the following day, you could be like a couple thousand miles to the south, and in relatively the same position, like from wherever you're standing, yet it's like lighting up the entire eastern seaboard at that same moment in time, as well parts of South America in terms of its power or in terms of its not just illumination but heat across such a wide swath. And that to me is fascinating if the sun is smaller and closer than...
I don't believe that. I mean, I'm not subscribing to the official distances and so. But I know that the sun is not close and small, because otherwise that effect, what you observe, cannot happen.
Right. So the I haven't done enough of looking through telescopes and done any of the math, so I'm fairly ignorant on the subject. But to me it's kind of empowering. Like I feel so many people look at this stuff as like so negative and the oppression, but it's kind of like you're being born. I hate to use the word reborn, but because it has those religious connotations, but like we're in this kind of this like weird place that you're kind of just born into when you start questioning the official models, and none of us know. It just strikes more curiosity about the natural world.
Oh yeah. I mean, now you know why my name is Gaia, because that's it. The Earth is an interesting puzzle, and we will never figure it out.
Right, and in terms of the fakeology, I'm just echoing something I had said earlier. I'm not subscribing to the notion that the people that run the space agencies and everything else, like, what if they don't know either? You know, what if they're, well, they're just, this is why, you know, the assumption that they have the explanations as to the origins of Earth and the whole workings of the cosmos. Like, what if they don't know?
I don't believe they do. They just,
right.
So they just came up with a model and it sold. So they went along with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in terms of, you know, when you were talking earlier about the evils of vaccination, a lot of people will talk about this deception of the space deception being evil. But like, who knows? What if people, I'm kind of combining these two different concepts of what I'd said earlier with Ab, in terms of whether or not the energetic frequencies of the masses have to be kind of plugged in with fear and happiness and anxiety, and because they feel they need that for some type of cohesion for civilization. What if there is same thing with explanations of space and where everything originated from? What if that's something that is a requirement of the human psyche? And that's why they're just filling in those holes, because people don't function well not knowing why the sun comes up and sets and things of that nature. I don't know. I'm just fostering conversation, but perhaps like I don't just default to they have the truth, therefore they're withholding it from us, therefore we're being suppressed and oppressed and all that. Like,
No, I agree. I mean, they're just like humans trying to figure it out, just like us.
Yeah,
just like with the whole fakeology thing. I mean, it's all figuring it out.
Yeah, that's and I think that could be at least not necessarily a fuse box to trigger happiness, but it can. I think it could get you out of a funk of that I see a lot of people getting into with the NASA hoax and this and that, where it's just it's like this dark demonic deception that's inescapable. You know, it's like, well, why don't we all go out and try to figure it out ourselves? If I'm being honest with myself, I don't really want to put in the effort, or maybe it's I don't have the capabilities or the talent to do it. And then they'll say, "Oh, well, we don't have the resources." It's like, well, that could be an excuse as well. Because how many people actually try? I'd say fewer than complain about it. But anyway, tryptamine. I saw you jump in here. You were arguing with an ounce of salt per day on spinning ball and the Bible and whatever else. Did you just give up on that, or I don't?
Sorry, what?
Yeah, tripped.
I'm saying you just jumped into this chat. I saw that you were on the thing with an ounce of salt per day. You were arguing with him about the inerrancy of the Bible and spinning ball versus flat Earth. I'm just curious if you'd given up on that chat and came back in here, or what else is going on?
No, I'm talking in another chat, so I'm not really, I wasn't really listening, but yeah, I was arguing with an ounce of salt, but this is the third time we argued about the same thing. Like, that same conversation happened like three times before.
I had an interaction with him a short while ago, and I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere, but I was drunk, so once they start trying to explain away Noah's Ark as something that happened in the
It's a big assumption, right? I mean,
you can't go anywhere with that. And it's, they'll go through all these linguistic loops to try to explain the unexplainable. But it's fine. It's it doesn't bother me anymore. It used to bother me immensely. But so what's your deal? Have you been here for a while on this server and on the website, or are you a newbie?
Oh yeah, I've been here since 2017.
Oh, okay. And what topic kind of keeps top of mind for you is what most compelling in terms of the Fakeology universe?
I don't know. Nothing in particular. Everything.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you were listening earlier, if you could listen if you weren't in the room, but Guy and I were trying to come to a kind of common ground on how to ascertain the dates of these older structures, particularly in Europe and China, like whether it's the Great Wall of China, whether it's some of these older castles and monuments. Do you have any thoughts on how we can determine whether they're from the 12th century or something much sooner?
Well, it depends on the site. I don't know. For example, most of the structures, you can probably at least know when, instead of knowing their age, you can know when they were not built.
Mm.
Just by the way they are, there's techniques of building that you see all around the world, like that at least recent civilizations had no way of building. I don't know. Yeah, so you can at least know when they were not built.
Yeah, so to use a modern analog.
That's fine. Yes. That's
yeah. So if we would record this chat on a cassette, on a tape recorder, then probably people would think it was from the 1980s and not from now, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, if we are looking at a castle from the 12th century, you're making a determination that it's not from another time period, based on the architectural style, based on the historical record of what, you know, when these buildings were built and in what regions. I don't know. I'm not.
What I'm saying is, there's, like, take the official stories when, like, the speaker, well, let's talk about the pyramids, for example. Like, they're associated with the more recent, what they call, the pharaohs, right? But the techniques at the time, like, original Simon said that they were giants, right? But have you seen the inner layers, the blocks that are inside, how big they are?
Only on television. I've only seen those Egyptology Learning Channel, History Channel from years ago. I used to watch them, but
yeah, what I'm saying is the outer layer is what we usually see in the images, but inside, like, if you take that outer layer of blocks, there are blocks, like, the outer layer of blocks are said to be 2 tons, 3 tons, right? And the inner blocks are more like 6 small blocks that are one single block. Like, imagine the blocks that is hard to make at the time, and make 5 of that blocks into a single block. But that alone, you can't say the pharaohs at the time had the techniques to build that.
Well, that introduces assumptions about who built them, what technology we actually have today, what technology may not have existed back whenever they were constructed. Also, what if the stone was poured in? You know, like, I've never physically been there, but it's just, how can we be certain that What's the official explanation? Well, they don't have one for sure, but slaves were.
Yeah. But
I mean, exactly. That sounds like a load of shit to me. I mean, but.
Yeah, but the one thing I hate, the theory I hate is that, well, I don't hate, but I don't like that much. Is one that said that they were built very recently, you know, in the Napoleon ages and stuff like that.
Right, but I'm not advocating that, but what's the difference? Like, if they were 1,000 years versus 300 years, that would just, now you're introducing assumptions about the technological capacity of Egyptians or whoever created the structures that existed 1,000 years ago versus 300 years ago. Like, what's the difference? What difference does 700 years make? The inference would be that the more time civilization has to evolve, the more time that technology could progress to be able to manage those types of weights, right?
Yeah, but like I said, I'm biased, so I want it to be much, much older than that.
So no, emotionally, you're interested in the idea.
No, not emotionally, but because there's other theories that I'm, you know, not believing, but I really support that the age of the pyramids being very, very old also supports, you know.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm not.
So I'm biased in that part too.
Yeah, just like, how can we, any of us, corroborate its age, you know, like what could we individually do to that would accord with any of those theories that you subscribe to that suggest that they're much older?
Go ahead.
There are studies out there from geologists as well, is that they say that the erosion pattern on the pyramids shows evidence of being much older than what they claim they are. So there is at least a data point to take into consideration.
Right.
If you believe that authority, of course, but that there is a possibility. I mean, it's not like some pull out of your ass theory. There is something to back it up. So, yeah, it could be. It is. It's possible, right?
Yeah, evidence is there. Right?
Yeah.
There is evidence, but not proof. Not like that. Yeah. You can't prove it, but there is evidence.
Yeah, and then what we talked about before, I mean, the same thing holds. If you say, okay, it's Napoleonic, so 200 years, then the same thing, also the same thing applies to the 10,000 year theory. Same thing. How did these people build it back then, even when they were much more primitive than today, but the same thing, how did Napoleon and his soldiers build it with 40-ton block limestone in 1800-something? It's the same thing.
I don't know. I'm saying in terms of the model of how humans came into existence, I think it should be a little bit more elastic than the linear one that kind of you're hinting at.
Yeah, but still, I mean, the thing is, it is not a hoax. I mean, there is physical thing, right? It's not like a story, like a New Zealand shooting or so. I mean, that's a story.
Right.
These images, these actors, and all that. The pyramids have a physical evidence. There is at least something there, right? So, whoever wants to claim, if it's an official Egyptologist from the University of Cairo, he has the same standards to abide to propose his theory as someone else.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
In a world so much different than the one you thought you knew, is where you'll find yourself once you've listened to Fakeologist Radio.
That was nice. I think it was Adam Miller, but I'm not sure. Okay. No, but you know, I mean, it's the same principle, the same standards of investigation hold to them, any one of them, as the other, right? I mean, Egyptologists has to prove that the pyramids were constructed 2,500 years ago, just like the Napoleonic proponent would need to prove it was constructed 200 years ago, or the 10,000 years ago primitive people need to have for that time period. It doesn't change.
I'm sorry, I just jumped out. I was trying to unmute. I was trying to put another thing on mute because I don't want it to pick up in this live stream. But what? We're going back into the establishment and that community of Egyptologists all kind of operating under their assumptions and using their methodologies, which are open to scrutiny. And if we're going to determine the age of the pyramids, are we using that same, are we going to apply that to the castles in the 12th century? Are we going to require any written documentation and custody of records of, how much of it is independent of their geologic record? Is there any independent way that we can corroborate? And I don't know, Tryptamine, which theories you're driving to with Egypt, but would those same standards apply to these castles or the Great Wall of China?
Yeah, well, I don't know about the Wall of China, so I haven't looked into it very much. But you can't age rock, so there's nothing basically you can do except for the techniques used in building and the stories of the people that lived there. And, if there's any documented history about it.
Yeah, I guess we're just coming back to some of the same challenges, is that there's this huge delta between the historical record in terms of any kind of written documentation of when certain things existed and took place versus, what other evidence that would go back into quote-unquote ancient times to demonstrate that they were 1,000 years old, 5,000 years old, 15,000 years old. And, therein lies the confusion and the uncertainty.
Yeah.
Guy, what are switching up? What is got your focal? Well, I got like another 15 minutes. What's your focus for the research? Any of the research that you've been doing lately? I know you were.
I like to look at stories that nobody else looks at. I don't like to go into the modern baby hoaxes stuff. I mean. 9/11, all this stuff. I mean, it's for me. That's just it's a dead horse,
Right.
So I've looked into the Great Escape. I've looked into the Shackleton expedition to Antarctica. The SS Ironic, which the official name is SS Neuronic, which is the precursor for the Titanic. Stuff like that, right? I mean, and like stuff nobody else looks at. That's what I don't like. Because, it's interesting because nobody else looks at it. That's the first one. But B, it's also because you cannot be held against by what you already find on YouTube. Right? I mean, if we talked about Marcus Allen, let's say Marcus Allen publishes a video on something, then you have to compete with what he has to say. And I don't want that. I want to look at my own stuff,
Are you publishing it anywhere, or do you have a channel?
I have a website. I have a blog that I don't use it very much. I published a lot on Fakeopedia.
Fakeopedia?
That is what I started with in the beginning with App and with Fake. And I have the forum where I'm at still, and that's it.
Okay.
I made a couple of YouTube videos, but they're not very big or so. I mean, I'm not looking for like a big audience or so. I don't care. I mean, like what our famous guy from Queensland said, yeah, nobody listens to your four-hour chats with Garrus. I don't fucking care, man, really. If people listen to it, nice. If they don't, also, no problem. I don't care, you know?
Hey, Guy.
Yes?
You know those drills that are in the rock, in some stone blocks in Egypt? The drills, the holes, small holes like they've been drilled.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Denisovans cave in Russia? Or at least, you know, searchable?
No, I know about the Denisovan hypothesis. That is what I know, but the details of it, I don't know.
Well, there's a cave that they found around 1980 in Russia.
Huh?
That had some it had some remains of Denisovans, right? Some humanoids that were at the time they were the first Denisovans that were discovered. But they had these tools. You know how old when they, you know, aged the DNA on that. On the remains, they found that it was 70,000.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say 80, but yeah, okay,
70,000. Yeah, 70,000 years old. But they found some tools. Well, it was like a porcelain that had those same drillings that you see on the rocks.
Uh huh.
They were fast. But they have no explanation how that happened 70,000 years ago. The porcelain was like a bracelet that you put on the arm. You know those bracelets that are not, they are cut at the middle. So you can just, and they had drills in them that looked exactly like the ones on the rock in Egypt. And supposedly you can't do that with any primitive tool. It has to be a fast drill.
Yeah, and exactly that, Dante, to answer one of your questions, that is also what I like, these mysteries of history. Because there is so much to explore out there, so many allegedly older things, and they can be old, I'm not saying they are not old, and there is so much that the mainstream just ignores, it doesn't cover it. And these kind of things, like what Trutamine is saying about these bracelets and this porcelain and drilling methods, and I think that is that is really what I like, because there is no official narrative, so you don't have to go against something officially stamped and this is how it is, even though that doesn't exist, because in Egyptology, I mean, Egyptology is really a sick so-called science. It's not science because it is. There are so many archaeologists who disagree with the so-called official narrative on Egyptology. It's insane. It's even bigger than geologists on global warming. Really, it's. So yeah, I like those kind of things that you don't have to fight a mainstream explanation, but yeah, you can find your own explanation about it.
What, in your experience, where you're at, I'm sure it's a common one wherever we are, but do you find people that are in day-to-day life that, you know, are kind of suspicious of the news, or how does it function over in Colombia?
Yeah, well, that's the good thing here. People are much more skeptic about governments, news, military, and all that kind of stuff, because they have suffered. And you will find the same thing in Mexico, and not so much in Europe and Western Europe, where I grew up, or in the U.S., or in Canada, or in Australia, or whatever, because life is comfortable there. But in my personal experience, I had a couple of good talks with people, especially with my mother-in-law, out of all people, and also my father-in-law. My father-in-law is 85 at the moment, and I told him that I don't believe the Apollo moon landings. And I mean, he is a what you would call a normie. He is completely subscribing to official stories and so. But then, 2 weeks after, he came to me and he literally hugged me and he said, listen, you're right. I don't believe people ever landed on the moon. And he saw it with his own eyes on television, of course, back then, right? And but he took my argument seriously. And I think in that sense, people here are much easier to convince that they have been lied to than in comfortable U.S., Canada, Australia, or Western Europe.
Yeah, I've also noticed that about people outside of the United States. More Eastern, I noticed it with some Ukrainians, definitely South Americans that, you know, they're it's not surprising to them that anything bullshit, and they don't jump into it in any depth, but it's like almost by default, like, oh yeah, of course they're lying. You know, it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
I find that to be refreshing. But personally.
Sorry to cut you off, but that is the, what I've seen. I mean, I've seen a lot of negative, pessimistic thoughts about waking people up. And it's not like in a mission, and John LeBron is right about that. I agree with that. It's not a mission. But still, it's nice if you have these experiences, right? I mean, you know about it. But in waking people up, especially in the U.S., much more than in Europe, in my experience, people are saying, yeah, it's a lost cause. And have you been to Walmart? Well, look at that. And that's how the world is. No, that's bullshit. That's not how the world is. And even the people shopping at Walmart can be open and can be triggered about something, and you just have to find an in. We all came here because we had an in. We had an aha, Erlebnis, and eureka moment, something that woke us up, right?
Right.
So you can do that with other people as well, and it's easier here in Latin America, as you know. But it is not impossible with Western comfortable life either.
Yeah, I just in my experience, it's not worth mining mountaintops for the small amount of gold residue that you get for trying to wake people up. And I don't often think that I'm awoken in any manner that it's suggestive that this is an urgent thing for people to do. It's a certain awareness that, you know, that the TV is full of deception, and that bleeds into the institutions that we've all grown up with, et cetera, and so forth, as we all know. But I don't necessarily think it leads to a happier day-to-day existence, or that I have some great insight into existence or how the world operates. Draw new inferences and certain conclusions in my own head that are fluid, but I'm definitely not on a crusade to wake anybody up. I became a little bit apathetic when I realized that in 9/11, just nobody really cared. Even those that like noticed that, yeah, that those buildings were probably blown up, and then they would just continue to talk about electoral politics as though there was like legitimacy to the system. It's like, hold on a second. Yeah. You've admitted that they blew up the buildings, which clearly infers that the event was planned in advance, which clearly means that they're lying about the whole Al-Qaeda and all this and that. And if you're going to still, like, have faith in the apparatus of government as though this is, like, it's just crazy to me. Like, this is not complicated. It's not like you need some class in formal logic at Oxford. That's good to hear. And then I guess I'll close that out because I gotta get going. What in your personal life, like, have you seen any kind of transcendence over the years of whatever that eureka moment was to where you're at now? How have you personally benefited at all from your time spent in doing the research, interacting with fakeologists? Has there been any like peace or improvement? Like,
I never really felt this urge of waking up people, like what many people have, like this crusade, as you call it. And I've also not experienced this Depression. Have you said anxiety or so? Depression, yeah. With the real world, because I think if I learned anything, then it is to interact better with the real world, knowing what you know, and still being able to talk to your family at a birthday party where everybody believes the politicians and Apollo and whatever and 9/11 and all that stuff, right? I mean, it's a much more comfortable or yeah, I don't know how to describe it, but I know something you don't know and you're not interested in it, and that's fine. That right. Idea.
Hello?
Yeah?
Oh yeah, no, I agree with you. It's I've come to more peace about it all. But yeah, no, that's good. I appreciate that. What I'm gonna jump out. I don't know if you're gonna continue on with tryptamine, but I think that what we talked about earlier with Jairus and hopefully going forward, I'm not obviously each of us are not gonna be on all the calls, but to have some type of structure and advancement on some of these topics, I think would be good.
Great. I mean, thanks, man. I mean, thanks for joining, and I mean. I love to speak to you. I mean, you're an intelligent human being, and we may disagree on some points, but you are great, man. I mean, please join more often.
Yeah, no, I look forward to it, because I have much less of a social life now that I'm kind of traveling alone, and there's not much interaction.
I mean, you have fucking hot Mexicanas there, right?
In certain venues, but I'm doing my own little detox and control alt delete from party scene, so it's not as much as I'd like, but certainly nothing like Medellin. But I here for a friend's wedding slash
what sorry what
I said it has nothing on Medellin, that's the Mecca, but that'll be next January or so. So anyways, great.
All right, really? Ready. If you're coming next January, then hopefully I will meet you, and hopefully I will bring along some fart podcasters. Then it will be cool.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much for the chat, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So, Trips, what do you think? Or are you already going to bed? Hey.
I'm not going anywhere.
Okay.
I have a long night tonight.
No, but I find it interesting this point about history. I think that is the best. I don't know best, but it's a good area because there is no definitive answer. Even the mainstream doesn't have an answer, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You basically can't prove anything when it comes to this. Just correlation.
Yeah.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
I imagine that right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hi, this is Jeffrey, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
No, I don't know.
What were you guys talking about before I joined? So I don't miss.
Yeah,
so I don't have to.
Yeah, many things about current day history. I mean, just general, and especially because Dante was new, so we talked about that.
Oh, he's new. I thought I've seen him before. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but he was new in the voice chat. That is it. Yeah, you're right. You said spectrometry. Yeah, that's the right word about the stars. Yeah, the light from the stars and all that. Yeah.
That's too much. You can't. Yeah. Too much to remember.
Yeah, I mean the thing for me is it is light in the sky, but it's more than that. It's not just lights in the sky. That's the thing. And
yeah. Well, I don't own a telescope, but yeah. I wouldn't. Yeah, they're not just lamps. Like the Quran says that they are just lamps in the in the sky.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, planets are definitely, you know, because you can zoom in and look at them and you see some structure and they've painted canals on Mars and so on. And, you see rings around Saturn and so on. So it's more than just a light. And it is a bit of a childish
nation. Have you heard of, there's some people that, something with Saturn, I don't know if they, you know, they think of it as their... I'm not sure what I'm talking about, but I remember something about there's some cult or something that has something to do with Saturn. Let me just remember it.
Yeah, well, what I've heard is that Saturn and Satan are something like the same thing or so, and then they go into Saturnalia, the Roman, allegedly Roman festivities and all that, but I'm not really up to date, I must say. I'm also cooking at the same moment, so.
Yeah. We have the Eid tomorrow, so it's fasting.
I thought it was already before. Okay.
No, we're the last. In the West, we're the last Arab country to have the Eid.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So is it with new moon? Then that it ends and starts? I think so, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The month.
Yeah.
Every new month.
Okay. I'm going to have dinner, so I will mute soon. Avoid my eating sounds here.
Yeah.
Saturn can be seen with the naked eye, although it may be difficult for an average person to discern, so it's unclear as to when it was discovered. Early man worshipped heavenly bodies as gods. Myths proclaim we once lived in the presence of gods. These gods were visible powers, often unpredictable and frequently violent. The priestly astronomers of ancient Mesopotamia and elsewhere make clear that these remarkable powers were planets. Pictographs show what is commonly considered to be a sun as a huge disk with a smaller one in the center, often with rays flowing out of it, with a third darker circle superimposed in the center of that. Our sun looks nothing like that. In many different cultures, we see a symbol of a crescent with a star in its center. How could this be when there is no star or planet closer to Earth than our moon to form such a configuration? And most importantly, why do so many remote and widespread ancient cultures who most likely could have never been in contact with one another, such as the Sumerians, Egyptians, Chinese, Native American Indians, Mayans, Babylonians, Australian Aboriginals, and many others, all tell the same story and draw similar pictures? If these ancient writings were based on valid observations rather than fantasy, then it is suggested that planets were closer to Earth in the past and they moved in a collinear way, meaning that they were lined up as they traveled through space. For observers on Earth, the result was a unified configuration in the heavens, visually dominated by a large glowing planet, theorized to have been Saturn, then seen without its present ring system. The other two bodies in this configuration are believed to be Venus and Mars, with Venus in the middle shining brightly. In many ancient sources, Saturn is called Sun. The usual name for Saturn in Chaldean astronomy was Alap Shamas, meaning Star of the Sun. Diodorus of Sicily reported that the Chaldeans called Cronos, aka Saturn, by the name Helios, or the Sun. And he explained that this was because Saturn was the most conspicuous of the planets. Popular Greek traditions identified Cronos as the alter ego of Helios. Hyginus also wrote that Saturn was called Sol. In the Babylonian astrological text, the word Shamash, sun, was used to designate Saturn and represented by an eight-pointed star in the middle of a disk, or an eight-spoked wheel. If Saturn was always as inconspicuous as it is present, what could have caused the races of antiquity to give Saturn the name Sun, or the Shining One? Ninib was the Babylonian name for Saturn, or at least one of them. Other names include Ninurta, which according to numerous scholars was the inspiration for the biblical character Nimrod. Ninib is said to shine like the sun. Astrologers must have found it increasingly contrary to reason to associate the star that gives us light and life with one of the palest and slowest of the planets. That's where the word Saturnine comes from. It means dark, slow, and gloomy. The Romans named the planet after Saturnus, the god of the harvest responsible for the Golden Age, which is the same as the Greek god Cronos, with a Z, and Chronos, with a K, often confused with Cronos with an H, the personification of time. It seems through the passage of millennia, Cronos has been infused with Cronos, who has been infused with death, aka the Grim Reaper, due to the fact that time leads to death. This is why separate searches for all of these characters will reveal them carrying a scythe. The ancient Greeks had two words for time, Chronos and Kairos. While Chronos refers to chronological sequential time, Kairos signifies specific opportune moments. Another noted deity that represents time is Ion. Though Ion stands for time unbounded, while Chronos symbolizes time divided into past, present, and future. God and time have always gone hand in hand. It reminds me of the watchmaker analogy, also known as the argument from design, which states, just as watches are set in motion by watchmakers, after which they operate according to their pre-established mechanisms, so also was the world begun by the God as creator, after which it and all its parts have operated according to their pre-established natural laws. With these laws perfectly in place, events have unfolded according to the prescribed plan. Sir Isaac Newton argued that the regular motion of the planets made it reasonable to believe in the continued existence of God. Newton also upheld the idea that, like a watchmaker, God was forced to intervene in the universe and tinker with the mechanism from time to time to ensure that it continued operating in good working order. Let's dig a little deeper into the many names of Saturn. Before the Romans and the Greeks, the Phoenicians worshipped the god Elis, or El, who was said to have sacrificed his only begotten son. Upon his death, he was deified as Saturn. Other Phoenician Canaanites worshipped Baal, which is also known as Moloch. Ancient Egypt's version of Cronus was assumed to be the god Jeb, but is also identified with Set or Seth. To the Hindus, he was called Shani or Shani. To the Armenians, Zervan or Zervon. It can get a little confusing and even controversial, especially to certain religious groups that don't realize they are pagans. But you just need to understand that seemingly all cultures and religions share astro-theological stories that result in the same characters under different names, and since their creation, have diverged in slightly varied directions. If you look far enough into this, you'll find that Saturn can represent multiple gods within one system of deities, including Christianity. It is said that Saturn is the god of a thousand names, and is no particular deity, but rather a universal spirit for the entire world that encompasses every aspect of our reality. A few other names and associations for Saturn include, but are not limited to, Jupiter, the Centaur, Orion, Osiris, Dionysus, the Winged One, Adonai, Hermes, Prometheus, Poseidon, Zeus, Thor, Serapis, Apollo, Tammuz, Attis, Hercules, Shiva, Dagon, Remphan, Azazel, Noah, Jesus, and Abraham. I did say that it could get a bit confusing, didn't I? For a more in-depth study of this chapter, refer to the YouTube channel called Son of Saturn. Link is in the description.
Saturnia and Saturnalia.
Before Rome was rebuilt in 753 BC, it was known as Saturnia. Saturnia is where the Roman festival Saturnalia took place in honor of the god Saturn. Saturnalia has its origins in an earlier Greek celebration called Cronia, in honor of Cronos. So it is the same thing. The only notable difference was that Cronia was celebrated on the 12th day of Hecatombion, which is roughly the end of July, beginning of August, whereas Saturnalia was held at the end of December. The holy day, or holiday, was celebrated with a sacrifice at the Temple of Saturn in the Roman Forum and a public banquet, followed by a private gift-giving, continual partying, and a carnival atmosphere that overturned Roman social norms. Gambling was permitted, and masters provided table service for their slaves. Saturnalia was a celebration and reflection of the lost golden age, when humans enjoyed the spontaneous bounty of the earth without labor under the rule of Saturn. According to Macrobius, a Latin writer from late antiquity who is the major source for information about this holy day, Saturnalia is a festival of light leading to the winter solstice, with the abundant presence of candles symbolizing the quest for knowledge and truth. Celebrated in the later Roman Empire on December 25th at the Dies Natalis of Sol Invictus, which means the birthday of the unconquerable sun, now celebrated as Christmas. The most sacred place in Islam is the Kaaba in Mecca, Saudi Arabia. The Kaaba is a mosque built by Abraham, according to Muslim tradition, constructed around a black stone. The Prophet Muhammad designated Mecca as the holy city of Islam and the direction in which all Muslims should offer their prayers. The Kaaba is believed to be the first place that was created on earth. According to my research, once a year, Muslims gather to encircle the Kaaba and walk around it counterclockwise. On the other side of the map in New York, there is an inverted cube in the ground where the Twin Towers once stood. Coincidence? Maybe. Meanwhile, on the flag of Israel, there is a hexagon in the middle of the six-pointed star, which can be interpreted as a 2D cube. Also, observant Jews wear what's called tefillin, or singular tefillah, which are little black cubes inscribed with verses from the Torah. They wrap them around their arms and they wear them on their heads. So what do Muslims have to do with Jews? Well, let's find out.
The Zohar explains this is the secret behind Abraham binding his son Isaac. Each of us are required to sacrifice our ego for the sake of sharing with others. The tefillin act like an antenna that draws down a powerful spiritual force that negates and sacrifices the influence of our selfish nature and ugly ego. 99% of Jews have no clue that this is why we bind tefillin on our left arm. We use the left arm as the left connotes our ego and the negative, Isaac, and the right refers to the soul and the positive, Abraham. Each year, Muslims go on a pilgrimage to walk around the Kaaba in Mecca, counterclockwise, 7 times. This is exactly how we wrap and bind our tefillin, counterclockwise, 7 times. The purpose of Hajj for Muslims is to connect to the same event of Abraham binding Isaac. Muslims relate this to Abraham binding his son Ishmael. The connection is profound. Only Kabbalah explains the true spiritual purpose. Perhaps this is why the Kaaba in Mecca is known as the House of Allah. Kaaba, and Allah, as we know, spells Kabbalah.
And what's all this have to do with Saturn? Well, Saturn has a hexagon on its north pole, supposedly, that can also be interpreted as a 2D cube. An ancient Sumerian cylinder portrays what appears to be a planet with a six-pointed star ring around it. Possibly Saturn. I would also buy that it's a shining sun, bringing us back to the theory that either Saturn was once the sun or another name for the sun. Another connection lies within the name Israel itself. Many scholars, and I mean many, have concluded that Israel is compounded from the names Isis, Ra, and El. You can go against the etymology all you'd like, but this is pretty obvious. So the hexagon, the cube, and Saturn make sense, but I'll admit it's semi-reasonable to be skeptical. People have also connected the black cube worship with a few other black cubes scattered about the world. There is a glass cube Apple store in New York. Apple's logo is already highly symbolic, stands for forbidden knowledge, so the cube is definitely questionable. In the prayer room at the United Nations, there is a black stone. I already know that the UN is crazy, so this is also questionable. They probably sacrifice babies on it. Something eerily similar was shown in the Miley Cyrus video with Big Sean. Here's yet another cube connection with the depiction of New Jerusalem mentioned in Revelations 21:16. Let's look at some relevant books that I found with mentions of cubes. The Shape of God.
The infinite cube is a concept without any practical value other than a way to visualize the infinite by limiting it. Infinity is a term that is hard to pin down. Time and space can be called infinite, but you still can't pin down just exactly where infinity is. God, the Absolute, is said to be an infinite cube. There is no place in which God is not present in the infinite cube. The cube unites the tetrahedron and contains it. The cube may be tiled with tetrahedrons.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, no big problem. PayPal donation
may also be tied to
infinity.
The concept of the infinite cube is
what is
behind the shape of the
hoop. $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hi, this is Errol C., and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio.
Give holies and the Kaaba.
The Spear of Destiny.
In the temple where Caiaphas and Annas awaited news of mutilation of the body of the Messiah, the veil of the Holy of Holies was rent from the top to bottom to expose the black cube of the Old Covenant, which is now split along its edges to open out into the form of a cross. The imageless cult of Jehovah was ended. The religion of the open heavens had begun.
And my favorite find, new dimensions for the cube of space. Check this out.
The cube is also a special geometrical shape for the sacred temples of many religions. The cube as the temple appears in the West in the three major religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. In Judaism, the temple that King Solomon built to honor Yahweh had from its inner sanctum the shape of a perfect cube. The temple itself was rectangular and was divided into an outer and an inner court by a folding partition that served as a door between the outer and the inner. This partition divided the temple in such a way that the inner court became a perfect cube with a dimension of 30 feet. At the exact center of this inner cube lay the Holy of Holies, a double cube lying on its side, 4 feet long, 2 feet wide, and 2 feet high. Within the Holy of Holies were the two tablets of the law and a miniature perfect cube inscribed with the name of God, Yahweh. The cubic temple itself is symbolic of the cube of space in all its dimensions, while the Holy of Holies at its center symbolizes the Hebrew letter Tau and the tarot card the world, which is both the temple that stands at the center of the universe and the exact center of the cube of space. Masonic lodges also obey this symbolism. They are oblong in shape, with the northernmost part of the lodge extending beyond the other three walls. Three lights shine on the central altar, at east, south, and west, to further emphasize the cubic nature of the inner sanctum of the Temple of Solomon. Thus, the lodge itself is the rectangular body of the temple, while the altar is the inner cubic temple. In Christianity, the New Jerusalem, the City of Heaven in Revelation, is also a perfect cube, its length,
breadth and height, each measuring 12,000 furlongs. Each of the cube's 12 edges measure 12,000 furlongs, a play on the 12 signs of the zodiac that govern the 12 edges of the cube of space. This celestial cube is the cube of space, as the star map of the sky, in which the elements, planets, and zodiac all have their appropriate stations. This heavenly cube also holds a great mystery in that each of its six faces measures 144,000 furlongs, 12,000 times 12,000. The number 144,000 is the secret symbolic number of souls in heaven. This sacred number symbolizes every sign of the zodiac squared is in heaven 1,000-fold. It is thus the number for all souls excluding none. In Islam, the most sacred shrine, Kaaba of Mecca, is also cubic in shape. The Kaaba, derived from the Arabic Kob, meaning cube, was a shrine that predated Islam. It was a granite-like cube-shaped shrine, originally surrounded by 360 pagan idols, marking the old measure of the year as 360 rather than 365 days. Muhammad eventually destroyed these 360 idols. The Kaaba is aligned so that each corner marks a cardinal direction. Embedded in its eastern corner is the sacred stone known as the Black Stone, which acts like the cornerstone of a Masonic structure. Pilgrims who walk around the Kaaba stone 7 times finish their pilgrimage by touching or kissing this sacred black stone. Here again, the cube as the temple becomes a symbol of celestial hierarchy. In this instance, the Kaaba is the central sun, while the wandering pilgrims are the planets who orbit around the sun. There have been many incarnations of the mystery school tradition in the West since the Middle Ages. One esoteric school, the 19th century secret society known as the Order of the Golden Dawn, is closest in grade structure to the map of spiritual development outlined on the cube of space. In order to understand the initiatory grades of the Golden Dawn, we first need to understand their predecessors. The spiritual lineage for the Golden Dawn is shown briefly in the following timeline: alchemy, hermeticism, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, Theosophy, and finally the Golden Dawn.
Logos, movies, and music.
We'll start on logos, but first I'm going to show you the basics on how Saturn symbolism can be found. The symbol for Saturn is composed of a Latin cross and a harvesting sickle. Yes, the cross can also be known as the Christian cross, Greek cross, etc. Notice that two X's can be made out in the seal of Saturn. Once you get a real good look at this seal, you'll begin to notice it all over. For instance, the Masonic square and compass. Unfinished triangle pointing up. Unfinished triangle pointing down, and two X's can be made. Speaking of unfinished triangles, if you finish them, we get the six-pointed star. Also, the seal of Saturn is the seal of Azazel, both easily converted into the star. Here's the Fox channel with two X's. Exxon Mobil. Also looks a bit like the patriarchal cross. The Kabbalah Tree of Life has within it the six-pointed star and the double X. Nissan, simple Saturn logo. Saturn cars. Here's an interesting one. We take Toyota, which semi looks like Saturn, but for those with eyes to see, we can also make out an owl. If you've done your research, it's simple to find that owls are one of the animals governed by Saturn. Here we go. I made a video about cigarettes and the occult, where I pointed out these traffic cigarettes as double X. But at the time, the in-your-face Saturn eluded me. All you have to do is turn the box. We have DirecTV. This is the kind of simple Saturn symbol that I don't really point out. If you look up Saturn corporate logos, you'll find a video where somebody shows every logo that they could possibly find that has swooshes and half rings, like Whirlpool, Burger King, Pepsi. Trying to explain that, look at that, dude, that's Saturn. And maybe it is, and yeah, it probably is, to be honest. But the thing is pointing that stuff out is kind of like, for beginners, they're going to be like, I don't think so, dude. You're fucking tripping. So anyway, sometimes it's just put out there, like Sega Saturn. Looks a lot like the Orphic Egg, also known as the Cosmic Egg, World Egg, and Mundane Egg. It's in many ancient creation myths. Here's an ad for Sega Saturn. Head for Saturn. This one is my favorite. It's my personal belief that the elite do this to toy with people. They will zone in on names to use for specific causes. This is how I see this ad. Up on the top left-hand corner, it says Ice Cube on Saturn. All I see is Cube on Saturn. In his hand is the console, looking like a cube. I believe in coincidences, I've just never seen one. So now we have the GameCube. You can immediately connect this with the star of Saturn. You can also immediately connect this to the G that's in the middle of the Masonic square and compass. And here's what Wiki says about the G. Varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but widely accepted as God, or the Great Architect. Here's something I found in a recent book called The Grand Illusion.
The G in the emblem of the Freemasons represents the Grand Architect, and if you relate this to God, or Saturn, for example, who is depicted with a white beard as Father Time, or Death, in the same manner as Jesus, and all the other Saturn, sun gods, it is therefore appropriate that the Grand Architect in the Matrix movies had a white beard. He also sat in a circular room with televisions that monitored the lives of every individual in the same way God is omnipresent, or how Santa, the man with the white beard, associated with the Celtic god Odin, can see you when you're sleeping, or how he knows when you're awake.
Anyway, gateway computers, we got the cow cube, and that's like, kind of hints at a bull. And finally, here's a website called blackcube.com. Their front page says, a select group of elite intelligence community veterans that specializes in tailored solutions to complex business litigation challenges. Again, go check that out. That's a crazy website. Now let's run through some movies. A few of the following images were found on this website, hollywoodsubliminals.wordpress.com. We have this Tesseract Infinity Stone, aka Cosmic Cube, Space Cube, and so on. It's in a few of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, Captain America, The Avengers, Thor, and also mentioned in The Guardians of the Galaxy, Iron Man 2, and S.H.I.E.L.D., the TV series. This website has way more references than I'm going to show you, but they pretty much mention any movie with a hexagon in it as well. A couple examples would be this Spider-Man and Cabin in the Woods. Got the honeycomb, you know, 2D cube, whatever. You know, everybody can make what they want from it at this point. And you're not, you know, but it could be a reference to the cube. There's only so many shapes and people are going to use them, knowingly and unknowingly. Moving on. This is one of my favorites, the Allspark from Transformers. Let's listen to a little bit of the intro to the first Transformers movie. The things Optimus is saying are relevant.
Before time began, there was the cube. We know not where it comes from, only that it holds the power to create worlds and fill them with life. That is how our race was born. For a time, we lived in harmony. But like all great power, some wanted it for good, others for evil.
Here's an Argus cube from the movie Super 8. There's a bunch of them, and they're parts of spacecrafts that assemble together, kind of like programmable matter. It's also interesting that the movie is called Super 8, being that 8 is relative to infinity, which is relative to Ouroboros, which is relative to Saturn. We'll get into that in a little bit. Here's LaMarchand's box, aka the Lament configuration, which acts as a door, or a key to a door, that leads to a hellish plane of existence where demon-like creatures reside. An ongoing debate in the film series is whether the realm accessed by the Lament configuration is intended to be the Abrahamic version of hell, or a dimension of endless pain and suffering that's original to the Hellraiser films. We have the Data Cube from the movie Prometheus. Honorable mention. Any Star Trek geeks in the house?
Star Trek The Next Generation!
Good. Well, then you'll remember the Borg and some of their ships being cubes. Borg are a collection of species turned into cybernetic organisms that function as a hive mind called the Collective. Here's a Borg ship passing by Saturn. Interesting enough, Saturn is called Sol 6 in Star Trek, meaning Sun 6 or Sixth Sun. Here's my other favorite besides Transformers, Sauron from Lord of the Rings. Not only is Sauron strikingly similar to Saturn in name, but the title Lord of the Rings gives it away. Sauron is a giant eye, and supposedly the south pole of Saturn resembles a giant eye. Looks like the CBS logo as well. And finally, fantasy and sci-fi movies have their own award ceremonies called the Saturn Awards. Teen Wolf from Masonic Television 1-1. Now let's go through some music and see some of Saturn's influence. Jimi Hendrix, South Saturn Delta. The Kryn, Dreaming Saturn. Last Autumn's Dream, Saturn's Skyline. The band, Rings of Saturn. Dante, Saturnine, with an MK Ultra Monarch Butterfly. Luke, Les Enfants de Saturn, which means Children of Saturn. Forgotten Tomb, Under Saturn's Retrograde. No Doubt, Return of Saturn. Zoroaster, Voice of Saturn. Son of Saturn. The Saturnine. The Ghost of 313. The Saturn Return. Saturn Dust. Django Django, Born Under Saturn. Michelle, Saturn's Rings. Goldie, Saturn's Return. Here's the weird subliminal in Mike Jack's Escape album. Paul Weller, Saturn's Pattern. Prophets of Saturn. Saturnalian Temple. Saturnian. Saturno. Oh wait, this one's not a rock band. Saturno by Capital Initial. Saturnus, Saturn and Ascension. Brave Saint Saturn. The Korea, Saturnus. And Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath has to do with Saturn worship, and people have been arguing for centuries whether Saturday or Sunday is the Sabbath. Here's a page from a book called Saturday or Sunday, Which is the Sabbath?
Is Saturday the seventh day, according to the Bible and the Ten Commandments? I answer yes. Is Sunday the first day of the week, and did the church change the seventh day, Saturday, for Sunday, the first day? I answer yes. Did Christ change the day? I answer no. James Cardinal Gibbons, Archbishop of Baltimore from 1877 to 1921.
Fraternity's Attorney.
The Fraternitas Saturni, FS, the Brotherhood of Saturn, has become known to English readers through fragmentary descriptions which emphasize the sensational sex-magical aspects of this lodge's work, or else its darker, more satanic side. This is understandable in the light of the fact that the FS is, or was, the most unabashedly Luciferian organization in the modern Western occult revival, and its practice of sexual occultism perhaps the most elaborately detailed of any such lodge. The FS represents a unique blend of
astrological cosmology, neo-Gnostic demonology, sexual occultism, and Freemasonic organizational principles. This grand synthesis was originally the vision of one man, the longtime Grand Master of the FS, Gregor A. Gregorius. Now let us look at some other material that I gathered on the Brotherhood of Saturn.
The OTO itself gave birth to a number of offshoots and rival movements, such as the Fraternitas Saturni, the Fraternitas Rosa Crociana Antica, the Ecclesia Gnostica Catholica, the Typhonian Current, and the Ordo Templi Orientis Antica, a breakaway branch formed in 1921 which focused particularly on sex magic and voodoo. Ordo Templi Orientis, OTO, Order of the Temple of the East, or Order of Oriental Templars, is an international fraternal and religious organization founded at the beginning of the 20th century. English author and occultist, Aleister Crowley has become the best known member of the order. Another organization, similar to the OTO with its Masonic structure, philosophy, and origins, is the FS, the Fraternitas Saturni, or Brotherhood of Saturn. According to Eldred Flowers, who wrote about this group from a sympathetic point of view, it is the most unabashedly Luciferian organization in the modern Western occult revival. Like the OTO and much of the Masonic literature, the FS also places considerable importance on Gnostic terminology and concepts. Flowers made frequent reference to Saturn Gnosis, and specific sexual rituals were described.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Teachings of the fraternity.
I'm Nick from New York, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Saturni, or the Brotherhood of Saturn, a German occult group dating from about 1930 and continuing after World War II. One essential feature of the Gnosis was the sex magic adjustment of coital positions to match planetary movements. The Saturnians and Gregor A. Gregorius. The beast was a goat who spawned 1,000 young. Sects and orders based on Crowley's system, or inspired by it, have been numerous in the latter half of this century. The most stable and continuous of the groups independent of Crowley's direct legacy is the Fraternitas Saturni, FS, Brotherhood of Saturn, led from 1927 to 1963 by Gregor A. Gregorius, whose mundane name was Eugene Crossier. THFS appears even more eclectic than Crowley's systems, and it seems also to embrace the traditional symbols of darkness even more enthusiastically than the beast did.
Saturn and Ouroboros.
Sometimes the Ouroboros is related to Saturn and some people don't know why. Well, in some depictions of the god Saturn himself, he's holding an Ouroboros. Let's refer to some books for a better understanding.
In Roman mythology, the Ouroboros was associated with Saturn, the god of time, who joined together the first and last months of the year like a serpent swallowing its own tail. Saturn swallowed his children and, with his scythe, symbolized the devouring of life and mortality. In Renaissance Europe, Saturn continued to be associated with the Ouroboros, and his scythe became a symbol of death. This association continued into more modern times, and the Ouroboros came to decorate numerous Art Nouveau calendars. In the cemetery, a snake biting its own tail is a symbol of immortality, rejuvenation, and eternity. It is seldom used in funerary art nowadays, but it was a very popular symbol in 19th century cemeteries. Images of the Ouroboros can be found in the art of ancient Egypt, where it symbolized the daily cycle of the sun, China, where it was among the myriad yin and yang symbols, the Roman Empire, where it was associated with Saturn, the god of time, as well as in European and American funerary art. The dragon with his tail in his head is the Ouroboros, a symbol of Saturn.
The Greeks knew Saturn as Kronos, a name that means time. The legend of this god is that he ate his own children. The Ouroboros is an image of the perpetual process of creation, destruction, dispersion, and assimilation of forms that animates the universe. The purpose of the great work is to rescue the soul from this fate. That is, to free her from the lending and borrowing forces that would bind her to unbalanced shells that, subjected to time, are perpetually devoured by Saturn. To pass beyond time is to achieve Hadith.
Saturn and Satan.
I've been told a few times that Saturn is Satan, but with no explanation. We all understand that the two words sound similar or have the same letters, you know, Saturn, Satan, but that's not good enough for me. I wanted to know why Satan was related to Pan and Sir Nunez and how they relate to Saturn, so I did some digging. Here's what I came up with.
Marduk was the Roman god Kronos, whose name means the Horned One. Artists often depicted Nimrod wearing a crown of bull horns. Kronos was also the Roman god Saturn, who devoured his own sons as soon as they were born. Eusebius recorded the Phoenicians, every year, sacrificed their beloved and only begotten children to Kronos or Saturn, and the Rhodesians often did the same. Saturn also serves man in the role of Satan, the tempter. When the vibrations of Saturn-Satan combine with an egocentric personality, people often trade their souls for material possessions and temporal powers. In this respect, Saturn is symbolic of the structure of values which lead to evolutionary growth. Thus, Saturn is the bridge between the forces of universal consciousness. Sometimes, Saturn is referred to as Rex Mundi, the king or prince of the world. Jesus is also known as Prince, and when you look at other depictions of Saturn, the god is viewed as Father Time, and later as the Grim Reaper, because of his influence and control of time. Thus, human aging and the destruction that is brought about in the life and death of every living organism. Father Time is depicted with a long white beard, in the same way as Quetzalcoatl and other deities like Jesus, Zeus, Kronos, etc. And from the name Saturn comes Satan and Santa, who is depicted with a long white beard. If you tilt the planet Saturn on its side, you get one of the most ancient symbols of the sun, a circle with a dot in the middle. Since Saturn is in the astronomical house of Capricorn, it is also associated with the goat, and thus Saturn or Satan is depicted with horns in the same way as the bull and goat gods. Satan translates to adversary, and in the Old Testament was the name of an agent of God, sent to test the faith of believers. In that context, many people believe Satan, or Satanael, to be an angelic figure, one doing God's will, and not a fallen angel. Satan has been liked with many figures in Judeo, Christian, Islamic, and pagan mythologies, including fallen angel Lucifer, the snake in the Garden of Eden, the beast of the Apocalypse, the Islamic Iblis, the Roman god Saturn, the Greek Pan, the Celtic Sinunios, and the devil. Capricorn was the house of Saturn, the most evil and wicked of all the planets. He is called the Great in Fortune, and all that part of the zodiac within the signs of Capricornus and Aquarius was under his dominion. Saturn was also known as Kronos, or Time, which destroys all things, and, in the poetical and allegorical language of mythology, devours even his own children. The figure of Saturn with his scythe is to this day an emblem of decay and death. The sun, therefore, when he entered Capricorn, passed into the house and under the dominion of Saturn, or death.
There's also a book called Saturn, A New Look at an Old Devil. That's worth checking out. And supposedly, Saturn has a moon called Pan, and another called Ceres that looks just like the Death Star.
And I did say supposedly.
Saturn, CERN, and time travel.
So we've connected Saturn to Cernunnos, and it seems that CERN is a wink to Cernunnos. Saturn being the god of time, it would make sense if the people behind it are indeed occult-minded, which seems the case. In CERN's logo, we can spot three sixes. On TV, we're seeing CERN-like machines with the capability of time travel. Anyone who has ever done the proper research would understand that Hollywood and mass media is but a branch of social engineering that often uses predictive programming. So what is CERN up to? It's mostly speculation, and I've yet to research it enough to really know, but with a machine or machines that big, the chances of a huge event that affects our reality go up a little bit. For more videos on the subject of CERN and time travel, check out Truth Media Revolution. As I mentioned in Chapter 1, Son of Saturn has Saturn videos packed with information. I had to watch all of his videos
Never forget. Never forget. 9/11 was Jewish lightning and a false flag.
We all know that 9/11 served as a false flag attack in order to justify invading other countries in the minds of Americans. We also know that Larry Silverstein signed a 99-year lease on the Twin Towers just months before the events took place. He even took out an insurance plan that happened to cover terrorism, and sometime after 9/11, he was given just over $4.5 billion. There is a lot of confusion around 9/11 due to the abundant amount of wild theories and speculation that has muddied the waters over the past 15 years. But one thing is for sure. Most people know that something wasn't right about the official story of 9/11, and almost everybody has questions. With the exception of the wonderful folks that make up the mainstream media, of course, they are all absolutely certain that there are no questions to be asked, and the official story is rock solid. People are waking up in record numbers, and the sloppiness of 9/11 helped tremendously. But nothing is being done, and we continue to be punked by the Israeli Zionist Jews that are at the heart of the 9/11 conspiracy. My hopes with making videos on ODD TV is to assist in waking enough people up before it's too late. Perhaps it already is too late. But I feel compelled to spread the message that I do. So with the 15th anniversary of the September 11th Jewish lightning and false flag, I want to share with you all one of the strangest things about 9/11, in my opinion. It was predicted in countless media, such as cartoons, commercials, TV shows, movies, album covers, novels, and comic books. I made a list of stuff I could find and put it in chronological order. This is very creepy stuff, and it gives amazing insight into the fact that there are powers in this world that operate in ways that we can't even imagine nor understand. They condition us, program us, and even disclose their plans all the time without us even being aware of it. Let's get started on this list. We have quite a...
Ground control's the major time.
ODD TV.
Ground control's the major time. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control's the Major Tom. Commencing countdown.
Hey everybody, what's happening up in this piece? ODD TV is in the building! So let's talk a little more about this Buzz Aldrin clip where he subtly admitted that we didn't go to the moon. I've been getting a lot of comments on my last upload of that very clip. People say he was only talking about how we didn't go back to the moon. Let's run the clip.
Why has nobody been to the moon in such a long time?
That's not
an 8-year-old's question. That's my question. I want to know, but I think I know. Because we didn't go there, and that's the way it happened. And if it didn't happen, it's nice to know why it didn't happen.
Why has nobody been to the moon in such a long time?
Because we didn't go there, and that's the way it happened.
To me, Buzz is flat out saying that we didn't go. Buzz, why haven't we gone back to the moon?
Because we didn't go there. We didn't go there. We didn't go there, and that's the way it happened.
Now, this isn't just some sudden realization. This isn't the evidence. Though I'm glad that Buzz came clean, there is much more information available to show us that outer space is not what we are led to believe. Let's go over a timeline that I made. I tried to keep it as simple as possible. Alright, so in 1915, NACA was founded, the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics. NACA was established by the federal government, and their mission statement was, "It shall be the duty of the Advisory Committee for Aeronautics to supervise and direct the scientific study of the problems of flight with a view to their practical solution." In 1923, Disney was founded. Walt Disney, of course, grew up in the Demolay, a young boy's version of masonry. Continuing on, in 1936, JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, was founded, in part by Jack Parsons, an avid follower of Aleister Crowley and a member of his fraternal organization, the OTO, Ordo Templi Orientis. Jack Parsons also hung out with L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of the Church of Scientology, which holds sci-fi-like religious beliefs, including the belief of a galactic dictator named Xenu. Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard both practiced black magic and participated in sex magic rituals together. In 1954, Walt Disney and the father of rocket technology in the United States, Wernher von Braun, meet and make 3 films about space exploration. One was called Man in Space.
Here to introduce you to this new series is Walt Disney. In our modern world, everywhere we look, we see the influence science has on our daily lives.
You're listening Discovery. To another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
You don't have free will. You have the appearance of free will.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
I'm Napoleon Wilson. I'm in Manchester, UK. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
That were miracles a few short years ago are accepted as commonplace today. Many of the things that seem impossible now will become realities tomorrow.
Just a couple years later in 1958, NACA is transformed into NASA, and the space program begins with projects like Mercury and Gemini. In 1966, filmmaker Stanley Kubrick meets with NASA employees as well as Arthur C. Clarke. Pretty damning photograph. 3 years before the first moon landing, Kubrick just happens to be running with NASA and a well-known author of science fiction books who also predicted satellites in 1945. Arthur C. Clarke's work includes Childhood's End, which was made into a 3-part series on Sci-Fi Channel in 2015. Very interesting series with so-called aliens, but they look like the epitome of Satan, and they come to usher in the new golden age for humanity.
There is no need to be afraid.
In 1968, Arthur C. Clarke wrote 2001, A Space Odyssey. It was developed concurrently with Stanley Kubrick's film version. Fun fact, between 1968 when the movie was made and 2001 when the movie takes place, that is exactly 33 years. They did the exact same thing with 9/11. The Twin Towers began construction in 1968 and they were knocked down in 2001, exactly 33 years later. Anyway, this not only served as practice for Stanley Kubrick, as he was given pointers on how space should be portrayed by Arthur C. Clarke, but this was also mental conditioning for the masses. 2001: A Space Odyssey was the number one movie in the box office in 1968. And 1 year later, in 1969, Apollo 11 claims to land men on the moon for the first time. President Richard Nixon called Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin from the White House to congratulate them.
Go ahead, Mr. President. This is Houston
out. Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made from the White House. I just can't tell you how proud we all are of what you have done.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a great honor and privilege for us to be here.
Meanwhile, I can't get cell phone service in the mountains here in Colorado. Later on in the same year, Apollo 12 lands men on the moon for the second time. Then in 1971, both Apollo 14 and 15 successfully land men on the moon. In 1972, both Apollo 16 and 17 also successfully land men on the moon. So that's six successful moon landings between 1969 and 1972. And it just suddenly stopped there. In 1981, Masonic Television, aka MTV, begins, starting right off with the usage of Apollo footage and continuing to use the Apollo program as their theme to further condition the masses on a wide scale, especially the younger generation. Make the Apollo missions cool and hip. Apollo missions, they're the hip thing to do. If MTV wasn't ran out of a Masonic temple, it wouldn't be such a dead giveaway, but they do, and it so happens that many NASA astronauts and employees are Freemasons. Now it's 2018, and nothing has happened since 1972. It's been just over 45 years, and that's a lot of time to be stagnant after six back-to-back moon landings. Get this, not only did NASA lose the telemetry data for all the moon landings, but NASA now claims that they lost the technology that got them to the moon in the first place.
I could go to the moon in a nanosecond. The problem is we don't have the technology to do that anymore. We used to, but we destroyed that technology, and it's a painful process to build it back again.
This is why we can't go past low Earth orbit, according to them.
Right now, we only can fly in Earth orbit. That's the farthest that we can go.
The kinds of technologies that we're testing out on space station are definitely helping us with our goals of going beyond low Earth orbit.
Early in the next decade, a set of crewed flights will test and prove the systems required for exploration beyond low Earth orbit.
And this is really the beginning, I think, of human beings leaving low Earth orbit.
But I have a hunch as to why we can't leave low Earth orbit. Dome. Yeah, so they have conceived this idea of a layer of radiation that acts as an impenetrable barrier. It's called the Van Allen radiation belt, and it's code for the firmament. Another thing is that this radiation belt was present for the Apollo missions, so how did they manage to make it through? Let's ask Apollo astronaut Alan Bean.
Any ill effects from the Van Allen radiation belts?
No. Now, I'm not sure we went far enough out to encounter the Van Allen radiation belt. Maybe we did.
Beginning at an altitude of 1,000 miles and extending an additional 25,000 miles lay lethal bands of radiation called the Van Allen radiation belts. Every space mission in history with humans on board, from both the United States and Soviet Union, from the first in 1961 to the present, has been well below this deadly radiation field. Mercury, Gemini, Soyuz, Skylab, the Space Shuttle, all maintained altitudes well below 1,000 miles. All except Apollo.
I don't know the distance to the Van Allen radiation belt. And if we did, it wasn't a problem. If we were going to encounter it, then we would have had to build the spacecraft and the spacesuit to not give humans a problem. You don't just build something and hope it works. You study to see what the threats are, the environment is, and then you say, how thick do I have to make the metal on the spacecraft so that going through this kind of radiation or these kind of meteorites, it won't get hurt. And so then we build it that way.
The belts are 1,000 miles to 25,000 miles above the Earth.
We went right out through them.
No effects on your cells?
Mm-mm, didn't even know it. I don't think anybody, well, maybe somebody said you went through the radiation belt, but we didn't feel it inside, and we didn't get any, you know, added radiation.
So you see, Team Apollo didn't know about this deadly radiation belt that would have killed them, so they weren't affected by it. Another interesting aspect of space travel is that it's not possible because thrust and combustion are not viable in a vacuum. Let's review a couple of experiments in a vacuum chamber that prove what I am talking about. First experiment, thrust in a vacuum.
You see, when I turn the fan on, it blows the feather all over the place. This is, of course, at atmospheric pressure right now. So since we're at Martian air pressure, let's unplug the vacuum pump and let's turn on this fan. Now place your bets as to what's going to happen to this feather. Now the fan's only going to produce maybe 10 miles per hour worth of wind.
On the surface of Mars, the fastest recorded wind speed is about 70 miles an hour. But let's say the superstorm in the Martian had wind speeds of 200 miles an hour, 20 times what we have here. To compensate for that, I imagine the feather is about 20 times easier to push over than a spaceship. So, let's see what happens. Get the fans on. And the feather's not moving. Can I click zoom in on that?
Thrust does not work in a vacuum, and thrust would be needed to traverse outer space. Second experiment, combustion in a vacuum.
This is a mixture of sugar, potassium nitrate, and iron oxide. This is used in amateur rockets because the ingredients are readily available and the amount of thrust it produces is quite high. So, let's light this on fire and see how it does. So this is in Earth atmosphere. As you can see, it burns rather rapidly, producing a little bit of thrust even. As you can see, towards the end, it moved it around. So now let's try it inside of a vacuum. No ignition. That's interesting.
Combustion does not work in a vacuum. This is a very big deal. Space travel falls on its face and breaks it, then dies with these two vacuum chamber experiments. Thanks, Cody's Lab. Outer space is an occultist dream. In the same way that Jack Parsons was obsessed with magic, so too was Walt Disney. You can see it throughout his work with the likes of Fantasia, and you can still see it to this day with how they advertise for Disney.
With Disney innovation and magic behind them, Disney DVDs are breathtaking, fun, interactive. A world filled with magical entertainment awaits you. The magic is at your fingertips. Disney DVD. Pure digital magic.
Welcome to a whole new world of Disney magic. Pure digital magic.
The magic of Disney this, the magic of Disney that, the magic kingdom. They even have a Disney cruise ship called Magic. And just like Jack Parsons, Walt Disney was fascinated by rockets. which in the occult circles are modern-day obelisks. Obelisks are erected all over the earth plane, and they symbolize domination, power, and political authority. The word obelisk translates to Baal's shaft, Baal as in the god or lord. Therefore, an obelisk is a penis. Speaking of penises, in the movie Toy Story, Woody and Buzz come into contact with references to Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. You can see it here on the carpet. It's the same carpet from The Shining, and they did this on purpose. There's a reference to room 237 when Woody is using the computer. Another one on the garbage truck license plate. And another on the cameras in the daycare center. This one even says Overlook, the hotel that The Shining took place in. The Shining was Stanley Kubrick's way of saying that he filmed the moon landings. In the movie, there are references to Tang, the drink that the astronauts took to the moon.
Astronauts to the moon.
Little Danny wearing an Apollo 11 sweater and heading for room 237. Another funny thing about Toy Story is that Tom Hanks plays Woody, and the year it came out is the same year that Apollo 13 came out, with Tom Hanks as the lead. And Tom Hanks also was the executive producer, meaning that he was the main producer behind a project for a 1998 miniseries called From the Earth to the Moon. It's pretty clear that Disney and NASA are connected.
Buzz, I can't believe you were actually in space!
Yeah, it's true. I was the first space ranger to visit the International Space Station.
Way to go, Buzzarino!
Let me show you.
It was a fantastic program between NASA and Disney to send Buzz up and did a tremendous education program, you know, for children all over the world, and I was so proud.
So when you're looking at this timeline, this is the timeline of deception with the space programs of the world pretending like outer space is the real thing. And you can add in 1928, Richard E. Byrd started exploring Antarctica. And he explored it for years and years and years. And in 1956 was his last expedition to Antarctica. So we can add those two things to the timeline. And just 3 years after Richard Byrd's last expedition to Antarctica, the Antarctic Treaty was established in 1959, just 1 year after NASA was founded. So when you really look at this and pay attention to all this stuff as a whole, you can see that we're being lied to. It seems that they have found the limitations for how far we can travel on this Earth plane and how high we can go in the sky. But don't just take my word for it. I want you to research this. Whether you believe me or you don't believe me, research it for yourself. It becomes very clear that something is going on with the establishment of the Antarctic Treaty right around the time NASA was founded to gatekeep space. It's all there. Just do your own research. Anyway, that's all I have for this one. Thanks for watching. I'm gone.
Trouble in space this morning as the International Space Crew attempted a spacewalk outside the station. Here's a live look at the astronauts. Well, I don't believe...
Where's their space suit?
My question is, through your career and your writing and your acting, you've inspired so many people to enter the sciences. How do you balance science with science fiction?
They're both the same.
One thing I really want your generation to embrace is that the Earth is a closed system. We cannot leave the Earth.
One thing I really want your generation to embrace is that the Earth is a closed system. We cannot leave the Earth.
It is Photoshop, but it has to be.
Wow, Neil Armstrong! Hey, wait a minute. You're supposed to be on the moon. I just saw it on TV.
Oh, there's a tape delay and solar winds.
Oh.
She always loved the pictures.
It's an old federal textbook. We've replaced them with the corrected versions.
Corrected.
Explaining how the Apollo missions were fake.
Folks, it's an honor for me to be working in this studio. This is the very soundstage where we fake the moon landing. And the JFK assassination. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is where we planned the JFK assassination.
Why has nobody been to the moon in such a long time?
Because we didn't go there, and that's where...
Nigeris. Jerry, are you still awake? Jerry, Jerry, from the Geneva. Hello, Jerry. Gone. Okay. Well, this was it. Alright. Unreal, there's a fake plane flying over me now. So.
I'm really the end of it, and that's all, folks.